Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show improve. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
What do you think, Jackie?
Well, I can try.
Think you've got guts enough to play the game no matter what happens? They'll shout insults at you. They'll come into your spikes first. They'll throw at your head.
They've been throwing at my head for a long time, Mr. Rickey.
Suppose I'm a player in the heat of an important game. Suppose I collide with you at second base, and when I get up, I say, you dirty black so-and-so. What do you do?
Mr. Rickey, do you want a ball player who's afraid to fight back?
I want a ball player with guts enough not to fight back. You got to do this job with base hits, stolen bases, and fielding ground balls, Jackie. Nothing else. Now I'm playing against you in a World Series, and I'm hot-headed. I want to win this game.
It should have been a moment of joy for Astros fans. Game 3 of the World Series last Friday. First baseman Yuli Gurriel had just hit a home run off of Dodgers pitcher Yu Darvish. But after Gurriel rounded the bases and entered the dugout, cameras captured him lifting the corners of his eyes with his fingers and using the word chinito, which roughly translates as little Chinese boy in Spanish, in reference to Darvish, who's half Japanese. Gurriel, who defected from Cuba in 2016, has apologized, and Major League Baseball is suspending him from 5 games next season, although he won't be missing any World Series games. But the debate over the incident is still raging. Julio Ricardo Varela is co-host of the political podcast In the Thick and founder of LatinoRebels.com. So first, Julio, tell us about Gurriel's apology. How did he explain his actions?
It was a typical apology. You know, I apologize if I offended anyone. It wasn't my intent. I'm sure it was very heartfelt. And I think Darvish also got Gurriel off the hook by saying it wasn't a big deal. Let's focus on baseball. But obviously the reaction online or amongst the community I'm around was quite different. I mean, they saw Gurriel as just crossing the line, and it bordered on racism.
In your opinion, does the punishment of a 5-game suspension next season, does it fit for what he did?
No. I think MLB was weak on this one. I think they should have suspended him at least for a game in the World Series. I think if you talk to Dodgers fans and if you talk to baseball fans in general, the only people that are saying that Gurriel should not be suspended were Astros fans. You know, he actually hit a home run on Sunday that kind of led to this exciting game. If he wasn't a part of it, you know, how would the outcome of the game be? You know, MLB talked a good game, but I think because Darvish said, well, it wasn't that bad, and Commissioner Manfred, I don't think he wanted to deal with the union. So this 5-game suspension that was happening for next year just seems a little bit out of whack.
You've heard the take, though, from several people, including an LA Times columnist who is half Salvadoran and half Japanese himself. They said that Gurriel shouldn't be harshly punished because racial sensitivities are different in the U.S. than they are in many Latin American countries. Do you agree with that?
I don't. And I think that's part of the problem with being Latin American. I'm originally from Puerto Rico. I was born and raised. But one of the things that I've done as a journalist, as a commentator, as a contributor at ESPN is talk about racism in sports in the Latin American space. It's kind of the ugly secret. We've allowed words like chinito or negrito, which means, you know, little black person, to be these terms of endearment, that it's all part of the culture. And, you know, this whole like, oh, we do it because, you know, that's the way we've grown up. I mean, isn't that what people used to say in the United States? Like, oh, that's what we used to do in the past. And I think what you're seeing in the reaction to the Gurriel comments, especially from young Latinos, young Latin Americans who are sports fans, is that this was wrong. Second generation Latinos that are living in the United States are kind of almost embarrassed about how we as Latin Americans kind of treat each other or label each other. It's almost like this dark stain that has never been discussed. And I'm actually seeing a lot more younger Latinos kind of taking the lead and saying that this type of behavior, no matter where you come from, is wrong. It's just wrong. And we need to call it out on our own, whether you're Cuban, whether you're Mexican, whether you're Puerto Rican. And I've seen more people speak out against than in favor.
So Guriel, he's young. He came to the U.S. in 2016. Should he have known better, even if he was new to the U.S.?
That's a great question. I mean, I think that's what you hear, like someone like Ozzie Guillen, who's the former Chicago White Sox manager. He was on ESPN Deportes, the Spanish language version of ESPN, saying, well, you know, don't blame it on Guriel. But this is 2017. This is the age of the internet. To feign cultural ignorance, you're a Major League Baseball player. You're playing in the United States. You've been there for a while now. I'm just not buying it. And I think a lot of Latino sports fans aren't buying it either.
So Dodgers pitcher Yu Darvish has tweeted that he'd like people to stay positive and move forward. Do you think that's likely? Or, I mean, it sounds like you're saying there should be a larger national conversation about this.
I think if Darvish and Guriel want to kumbaya this moment, go for it. But I think there needs to be a conversation, a global conversation, especially, you know, racism is not talked about in Latin America. It's accepted. It's joked upon. It's innocent. It's just who we are. And that's changing in a lot of ways. When you're living in a bilingual, bicultural world, and you see in the United States it's becoming more and more Latino and more connected to Latin America, these type of conversations are making people uncomfortable in Latin America, but they're necessary. And if Darvish and Guriel don't want to have it, don't worry about it. The Latino internet's going to have it, and they have been having it. If it kickstarts that type of conversation, I'm all for it.
That was Julio Ricardo Varela, founder of LatinoRebels.com.
See, every single thing that we are concerned about, every single thing when you turn on the TV tomorrow morning that they will talk about, will all be related to racism, white supremacy as a system. Okay, Donald Trump. I say meet your next president.
The Trump administration is offering up to $60 million to help several African nations work together to fight terrorism. The news comes as Congress looks more closely at U.S. military activities in the region following the ambush in Niger this month that killed four American service members. NPR's Michelle Kellerman reports.
Five nations, Mali, Niger, Burkina Faso, Mauritania, and Chad, are looking for help as they try to battle extremists from Boko Haram to ISIS and Al-Qaeda. The U.S. ambassador to the U.N., Nikki Haley, says the U.S. will contribute up to $60 million to help them get organized.
We understand the force will need ongoing support and are eager for opportunities to work closely with our partners to make this effort a successful one. But we believe that the G5 force must be first and foremost, owned by the countries of the region themselves.
A Democrat on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, Chris Coons of Delaware, says $60 million is just a start.
Our allies in the region are stretched thin. The flood of weapons, the absolute flood of weapons into this region after the collapse of the Gaddafi regime in Libya has profoundly destabilized the region. And these are vast areas.
And the U.S., Kuhn says, needs more than just one tool to respond.
Focusing solely on a military means of addressing the instability across the Sahel misses the central role of development and diplomacy along with defense.
And Coons worries about what he calls the savage budget cuts by this administration and the lack of clarity on U.S. policy in Africa. Michelle Kellerman, NPR News, the State Department.
So this relationship between the United States and France in what is called fighting war and terror in the Sahel comes 6 years after the United States, France, and Britain went into Libya to destroy that country because that country wanted to create the basis for the unification of Africa and an African currency. Last year, President Obama said that going into Libya was the biggest mistake of his presidency.
This is how people in Tripoli are getting their drinking water, drilling through pavements to access underground wells in a desperate search for supplies.
The situation we're in now is affecting the entire city. no water means no electricity. Tenants can't pray without water. They can't go to the bathroom. They can't do anything, not even drink. The problem is that the government does nothing. So now we are digging for water as a temporary solution.
Earlier this month, water supplies were cut to households for urgent maintenance work. To make matters worse, an armed group then sabotaged Tripoli's drinking water infrastructure. Engineers are working hard to repair it, but a lack of investment and a shortage of spare parts means progress is slow. 6 years since the death of Muammar Gaddafi, Libya remains divided and devastated. The country is plagued by internal fighting and financial collapse. The water shortage is another challenge for the UN-backed Government of National Accord based in Tripoli. It's already dealing with a failing health service, spiralling inflation, and public sector strikes over pay. People are demanding solutions to their worsening living conditions. The head of the Water Resources Authority says he needs more money from the government if things are to improve.
In the absence of adequate spare parts, a lack of money, security chaos, people have been taking matters into their own hands, and this in turn has affected the performance of the system.
The UN says divisions are deepening in Libya and that finding a political agreement is the only way forward. For people struggling to access basic supplies like water, it can't come soon enough. Victoria Gatenby, Al Jazeera.
And may all your Christmases be white.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the Daily Beast has uncovered another website that was incredibly active on social media during and after the election that was actually run by Russian trolls. Now, the website was known as Black Matters US, and you might have seen posts by this organization on Facebook because it was all over the place. A lot of their posts went viral. Now, recent information about this group of trolls indicates that they were trying to spread fake information or propaganda indicating that black activists in the United States were launching a war on Christmas and that they were selling merchandise that supported this so-called war on Christmas. So let me give you the details. According to Ben Collins at the Daily Beast, Black Matters US, which independent Russian media outlet RBC identified as one of the most influential websites and troll accounts operated out of the Kremlin-backed internet research agency, pushed t-shirts imploring its users to say no to ho 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 alongside a picture of a candy cane. They printed a lot of shirts. By the way, they sold some of this merchandise. They printed shirts that made no sense. I'll give you another example. One said, "Dear cops, don't shoot, suck." Which
it reminds me of the shirts I used to see in Turkey when I was growing up, like in the 1970s. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to copy like the Los Angeles Lakers, but they didn't know what they're doing. And yeah. So it would be like the Los Angeles Suckers.
Yeah.
The Los Angeles Luckers.
Yes, Adidos.
But the Adidos is done on purpose to try to trick people.
Yes.
But the rest is just clownorama.
Yes.
And they're doing a troll farm here, but they didn't bother doing any research. So they're like, and they don't apparently or hire anyone that actually speaks fluent English. So, but they also said the racist things too, but we'll get to that.
Yeah, so I'll give you another example. A sweatshirt sold by Black Matters US, its holiday store, said boycott Christmas, black don't need white Xmas. And by the way, these are apparently still available for nearly $40.
But now people are going to buy it like for shtick, you know? Like JR always wears the t-shirts of guys who were on teams for like 13 seconds. Like you could barely get them. Now this is going to be like a collector's item. Black don't need white Xmas. Oh, is that what black says?
Yeah, there was one that said thug life, and the imagery included handguns and Christmas trees.
Yeah, and so let's get to the Russian government and whoever's paying for this and their racism. So they have a black Christmas only, and there's a gun in a stocking. Why would black Americans want to buy that? Like, so like, oh yeah, black Christmas is where we shoot people. Okay, and then there's a thug life reference. And then they suggested that African Americans boycott the holiday because, quote, you can't afford it. I'm not sure that any of this actually appeals to African Americans, which, by the way, actually I am sure because it didn't. None of this stuff sold and it didn't right. work. But the attempt to divide us based on race is really, really disturbing.
So what's interesting about this particular campaign that they launched was both how unsophisticated and in some ways sophisticated it was. Because these Russian trolls were obviously aware that every holiday season there is this nonsense talking point from the right in regard to a war on Christmas. There's a war on Christmas in the United States. There's no war on Christmas. If someone says happy holidays, it's not the end of the world, right? But they apparently knew that, and so they utilized that talking point as a way of driving a further wedge between races in the country. And so you're right, Cenk. This particular campaign didn't seem to work as much as other campaigns that were launched by these Russian trolls. But I do want to go to a pretty great ABC video, ABC News video on this topic, because they focus specifically on Black Matters U.S. and some of the other strategies that they utilize. Take a look.
Hey, Black Matters U.S. Hey.
A stunning claim tonight about just who's behind the group promoted in this music video. Black Matters U.S. Congressional investigators say Black Matters U.S. was actually set up by the Russians during the 2016 election to stir up racial tensions.
It's not fair. I don't think it's fair.
Black Matters. The St. Louis rapper who wrote the music for the video says he got Instagram messages from people he did not know asking him to write a song dealing with police brutality.
I had no clue that it was Russian or anything like that. No, sir. It messed me up.
All part of a sophisticated campaign that included Facebook ads, Twitter posts, and efforts to organize at least two big rallies, one against police brutality. U.S. investigators believe it was directed from this so-called troll factory in St. Petersburg, Russia.
It's a way to suppress votes and stoke fear, the level of sophistication that I don't think we appreciated at the time.
So they would also utilize, Black Americans for some of these campaigns and make it seem as though what they were doing was good or legitimate.
So anybody still think that the Russian government is perfectly innocent and there's no proof? There's no proof. How much proof do you need? If you hear anybody saying that, they're being purposely blind. And not the Russian people, but the Russian government wants to tear us apart. They want to tear us apart politically. They want to tear us apart racially. I'm not a right winger. I have no. In the old days, when the right wingers had this weird distaste of Russia, right, back from the old Soviet Union,
the communism.
I'm not in that camp. I'm not in the left wing camp that has this weird love affair with Russia. Mm-hmm. I don't know why you have a love affair with Russia. It's led by a dictator that has destroyed and pulverized democracy in Russia, that murders journalists. I don't know why anyone who is a progressive in their right mind would want to defend the Russian government. Are you a lunatic? Okay, now that doesn't mean I want to go to war with Russia. Okay, no, that is not a natural conclusion to I can't stand the Russian government. But for Putin, who authorized all these campaigns, anyone who defends him in America is nuts. I don't get it from a progressive point of view. I don't get it from a right wing point of view. The right wingers are now so smitten with their dear leader Trump, mm-hmm. since Trump loves Putin because Putin probably bailed him out of more bankruptcies, and now you want to, that corruption is what you support. Okay, you're an idiot. Okay, so look at what they did. Look at what they did. They're trying to tear us apart and get white people to hate black people and black people to hate white people in this country. So, fuck Putin and all of his attempts here. Now, that doesn't mean that the consequences of that are, whether it's war or anything else. Look, Mueller's doing his investigation. That's a separate issue. Let him do the investigation, see what he finds. If he finds connections, let him prosecute that. If he doesn't, then we don't get to prosecute it. I understand that the U.S. also does propaganda. I understand that the U.S. historically has done some terrible things in foreign countries. I'm not in favor of that.
Right. And we talk about those things and we criticize those things as well, including, you know, when the JFK documents were released, a portion of them, you know, what type of propaganda, not just propaganda, what the CIA was planning on doing to Cuban refugees in South Florida just to drum up support for invading Cuba. Like, we criticize those things all the time as well.
But that doesn't vitiate what Putin is doing right now. You can think those things at the same time. What the U.S. government did was bad, and what the Russian government is doing today to rip us apart is terrible. So, fuck Putin. I just want to be absolutely clear about that.
I want to be a cop. I want to be a cop. Yeah. I want to be a cop.
All right, folks, we'll go to our second story. A former New Jersey police chief with a history of blatant racism has been charged with civil rights and federal hate crimes. Folks, this is, another one of those stunning stories that we have to deal with. Frank Nucera Jr., the former chief of police in Bordentown Township, New Jersey, was arrested and charged with civil rights and federal hate crimes on Monday following a 2016 incident in which he slammed a handcuffed black teen's head into a door jamb.
I think the allegation is clear. Chief Nucera harbored an intense, senseless, irrational, and bigoted view towards African Americans. On that day, he came into contact with a prisoner. That prisoner was in custody. That prisoner was restrained. They were handcuffed. They were not an immediate threat to anybody in the community. They were not an immediate threat to any police officer. And Chief Nucera, former Chief Nucera, chose to assault that person for no reason other than what he was driven by, at least in part, by his racial hatred.
Nucera mysteriously retired in January amid rumors he was under criminal investigation. The criminal complaint against him says he had a blatant history of racism and used racial slurs. According to the complaint in 2015, while talking to an officer about an African-American who allegedly slashed the tires of a police vehicle, Nucera said, "I wish that nigga would come back from Trenton and give me a reason to put my hands on him. I'm tired of them. These niggas are like ISIS. They have no value. They should line them all up and mow them down. I like to be on the firing squad. I could do it." He also used police dogs to intimidate African Americans, bringing them to high school basketball games when his department was providing security. Huh. Joining us via FaceTime from Newark, New Jersey is DeLacy Davis, an East Orange, New Jersey police sergeant and founder of Black Cops Against Police Brutality. Now, DeLacy, here's what's interesting. You won't see folks like David, you won't see, like, of course, the sheriff out of Milwaukee County, who loves running his mouth on David Clark, running his mouth on Fox News about cops like this. You won't hear any of these Blue Lives Matter people say anything about this police officer, but this is what black folks have been talking about for years. This is what Black Lives Matter is going after, and you will never hear Jeff Sessions or Donald Trump or Mike Pence say anything about this kind of cop. And this is what black folks always been talking about.
Absolutely. First, let me just correct. I'm retired from East Orange 20 years. But this is why we started Black Cops Against Police Brutality and a part of the National Coalition of Law Enforcement Officers for Justice, Reform, and Accountability. This is rampant in law enforcement. While some of my colleagues do not want to acknowledge that this is the behavior and the attitude of many of our counterparts in law enforcement, I've always said, and you've heard me say, Roland, that organizational culture of law enforcement is white, male, dominated, racist, sexist, homophobic, and then you might find the good cops. What frightens me in this matter is that he's got 34 years of service. His son is still a sergeant on that police force. I commend the officer who recorded him secretly for 1 year, but he's been there 34 years. Where is everyone?
So imagine what he had been doing all of these years.
Absolutely. Destroying lives. And this is why it's important and incumbent upon us to continue to speak up. This is why what Kaepernick started in the NFL is important. This is why it's critical that black people and people of goodwill and consciousness all across this country speak up and speak out, because it's prevalent. It's ingrained. I mean, this is Jim Crow all over again. And with number 45 dog whistling to everyone out there, folks believe now it's time to see how outrageous can I be while under the color of this uniform and this badge, because I'm going to be protected at the highest levels of government.
And I'm quite sure you have the people who will say, oh, this is an isolated incident. This is the guy who was the police chief. He was over this department.
Absolutely. It's an isolated incident because we caught it on audio recordings. If it wasn't caught, then they'd say it didn't happen at all. These are just folks crying wolf. But the fact that you have the unmitigated gall to want to line up African-Americans and gun them down and articulate that, the greater concern is all the people that he's trained who've come along. And we know that of the vast majority of these 18,000 police departments in this country, most of them are small little departments like that one. And that's a concern, because generally, even when they're charged with something, not in this case, but usually when they're charged, they leave one little department and take their venom to another one.
All right, DeLacy Davis, we certainly appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Roland.
I want to quickly go to my panel here. Scott, again, federal hate crime charges. Man, I'm trying to understand why New Jersey is not pursuing charges against this police chief for his actions.
Well, they certainly ought to, and they ought to go back over 34 years. They can put the resources behind it, find any number of incidents, and then prosecute this individual. Now, there'll be a statute of limitations, but in most jurisdictions, you can go back 5 years. They need to put the federal and state resources behind it in order to bring justice to those individuals who I'm sure he has abused.
Ralph?
No, I would agree. This opens the Pandora's box for almost every arrest that has been made in this township over the past whatever the statute of limitations is. And this is going to cost New Jersey a whole lot of money.
And it should. And India, again, I just love all of these folks who say, oh, leave the cops alone.
Listen.
They're doing a great job. Nothing wrong with them.
Listen. It's not going to happen. And I think the thing I'd like to address is the systemic issues here. So I was speaking to a community activist from Cincinnati yesterday, as a matter of fact. And one of the concerns they have is about what happens with some of the, they did a collaborative agreement between the community and the police in that city. And one of the things they're starting to see is indications after Sessions has come into play that's not going to be enforced and that the police are kind of starting to slip away from that. So what I think we need to focus on are the kinds of things that could help support this systemically. And we're starting to see the erosion of that too now.
Seattle's a great place to visit because it has, I guess you could say, a little bit of everything, but I like to think of it as a lot of everything.
Supporters of Nikita Oliver say her run for mayor was a thrilling ride. She was the local favorite in South Seattle. Supporters say Oliver's loss in the primary isn't the end of their movement or the People's Party. But they're less enthusiastic about the current race between Jenny Durkin and Carrie Moon. KUOW's Amy Radel reports.
Marcus Green is the founder and editor of the South Seattle Emerald. He knew lawyer and artist Nikita Oliver through his coverage of the movement against a new youth jail and other issues. He recalls bumping into her one day when they were both working with students at Franklin High School.
She said, you know, I might have an exclusive for you real soon. And I said, oh, really?
Soon after, Oliver announced that she was running for mayor under the banner of the People's Party. Green says Oliver's run brought new people into politics. He compared the joyful atmosphere at her campaign launch to a religious revival.
I'd never seen any kickoff with that level of excitement and exuberance. And, you know, Washington Hall was just packed with, you know, a variety of different races. It was, you know, it was intergenerational.
Activist Karen Turing, who moved to Seattle in 1999, says she saw years of social justice organizing coming to fruition in the founding of the People's Party and Oliver's candidacy.
I had a lot of hope. I really believe that Nikita really had a really good chance because I knew how many volunteers she had on the ground. I knew the way that she was mobilizing. I was in conversations with people that I'm not normally in conversations with who were voting for her. Even in my own neighborhood, right, there were Nikita signs in yards, and I was like, whoa, you know, this person?
And Turing says she was excited to support Oliver.
One of the things that I did was made the largest political contribution that I've ever made, and that felt very empowering.
Turing says in the past, she often felt like political parties wanted to use African-American voters for their own ends. She feels betrayed by Trump and Clinton voters in 2016.
I don't know how to say this. I feel like white women failed me, and I haven't been able to trust them ever since.
Now, Oliver's supporters are facing a choice between two white women for mayor, Carrie Moon and Jenny Durkin. And Marcus Green says the mood among Oliver's supporters is a lot different.
I probably ranges from despondency to obligation, meaning that, okay, well, this is democracy. Democracy is messy, and a lot of times you don't always get what you want.
Much of Oliver's support in South Seattle has flowed to Carrie Moon in the general election, but there is a sense of resignation. Josiah Wirtz co-owns Cafe Red, a coffee house next to Othello's light rail station. He endorsed Oliver in the primary, but now there's a Carrie Moon sign in his window.
We're not necessarily excited that Moon is our candidate over Oliver. However, we do feel that this is really our last chance to create a more equitable Seattle before it really just does become a new San Francisco.
Oliver supporters say they will keep working on the issues that fueled her run. They see the choice of Kirsten Harris-Talley to fill Tim Burgess's place on the Seattle City Council as one small victory for the People's Party. And Turing says, despite feeling tired, she will not sit out the election because people died for her right to vote and the ballot comes right to her house.
If you are not voting and that ballot is sitting there on your dining room table or your side table or wherever you put your mail, then I just want to spank you. I do. I just want to spank you.
So don't forget to vote by November 7th. I'm Amy Radel, KUOW News.
I don't want us to lose sight that things are getting better. Each successive generation seems to be making progress in changing attitudes when it comes to race. Doesn't mean we're in a post-racial society. It doesn't mean that racism is eliminated. But, you know, when I talk to Malia and Sasha, and I listen to their friends and I see them interact, they're better than we are. They're better than we were on these issues. And that's true in every community that I've visited all across the country.
I was coming from a class and I heard some person in a corner say the N-word, and I turned to tell him not to say that.
And then this happened. You're looking at a photo of a 14-year-old Dublin High School student who says she was assaulted on campus by a white male student who objected to her asking one of her friends to not use the N-word.
Nigga!
She asked not to reveal her identity.
I told them that that language was very inappropriate, and so I said that I would go report this to a campus supervisor or somebody with authority that would tell them all this is wrong.
But before she could do that,
I get grabbed by another student that was defending the person that said the N-word.
Justice would be expelling the young man from campus.
Justice would be having that young man removed from the school.
The victim's parents say that they want the Dublin Unified School District to make that happen because
it's a violent crime. She had to defend herself. And, you know, she didn't fight back, per se, because she chose not to, thought that might not be the best thing to do. But there's an element of fear there, because I know she's still hurting.
I would like there to be a no-tolerance policy on using the N-word. I don't care what color the student is.
Officials here at the Dublin Unified School District say language that degrades racial identity is not tolerated.
It's not tolerated in Dublin schools, and we address each issue when it comes up on a case-by-case basis.
Now, while student privacy prevents officials here at the Dublin Unified School District from commenting on a student being involved in a fight or using the N-word on campus, officials here did say that it would take some prior history of a student doing either of those two things to be expelled from school.
I want the school to remove this student from campus because he may repeat this action again, and it may not be to me, but it could be to somebody else.
In Dublin, Hazik Madyun, Crown 4 News.
As your body grows bigger, your mind must flower. It's great to learn,
cause knowledge is power.
It's Schoolhouse Rockin', what's your bum bum bum? On your favorite Schoolhouse Rockin'.
On the morning of October 19th, I was made aware about 6:45 in the morning from a close friend. So she called me and said, have you seen what has been posted again? And I said, I don't know what you're talking about. I was getting ready to get the kids to the bus, and she said, he's on video saying he's going to kill the people on his list. On October 9th, which was a Monday, the kids were off school, but I was made aware on the night of the 8th that there were photos and a video of a boy in my son's school in the same grade, and he was posting things with the N-word and changing words to songs to use the N-word.
Matata, no niggers today. Worries. Bigger. A coon. A coach coon.
When we first spoke of it, he said, Mom, I know that he's the one that's got the problem. I know that he's the one that has the issue, and it's not about me. I first spoke with the principal in regards to the matter and set an appointment to speak, to sit and speak with him, with my son's father on the morning of the 12th. His father and I went in, and the superintendent of schools was also there, and there were police officers there. At that point, they explained that the boy was not in school, but because it involves a juvenile, there's not a lot of information that they can share. In the course of the days that he was off, I guess he was home unsupervised. He still had access to all of his social media and started posting more accounts. And this time he was calling my son out by name specifically. And the video was shot. You could see the neighborhood that we are in. It was in the video. Then he pans over and he zooms in on the school itself and says,
school kids that are on Jesus' list. Fuck. But we're gonna die.
And at that point, you just have this chill, because I know that the child has problems. I know that he's already targeting my son, and now he's saying he wants to kill him. And I don't know what you say to that. So we didn't know where he was. And within a matter of a couple of hours, there was another video posted where it showed this boy with a rifle.
This is my rifle.
In his home. So now I know that he actually has a way to do this. Clearly there's not any supervision, because he's riding around a bike or scooter or whatever. And his child is obviously full of hate and has a whole nother set of issues. But at this point, you're talking about killing my son. And I know that you know where we are because you're in our neighborhood and around our neighborhood. You zoom into the school. It was very calculated. And at that point, it was about safety. We didn't, at that point, know where he was. They put the school on a soft lockdown. And I got my children and we left for another home of ours. That's when I think it hit him he just said, Mom, why? We're sitting at the kitchen table and he said, why? I don't even know him. This boy isn't somebody who had been in the school district before. So I said, walk me through what happened. He said, we were at lunch and one of the boys had him come over and sit at our table, and he immediately started calling him the N-word, telling him he's his slave, telling him he's going to buy him in 2 weeks. It's disturbing. It literally boils down to the color of my son's skin. He didn't know him, had never, been at a I don't know, an activity with him or anything. Did not know him. Didn't even know, at that point, didn't know his last name, because that's a very large school district. I think that's when it really hit. I think he tried to put on a brave face, but, you know, then the concern became, what are the kids in school going to say? And what's going to happen now? I don't know that I'll ever forget the look on his face when he said, why? And it was sadness, it was fear, it was confusion, it was maybe not wanting to recognize the real reason is the color of his skin, and that's not right. So there's a lot of pain and confusion involved. You know, kids, I don't know. I don't want him to be angry. Nobody wants that for their kid, because it just, some of his innocence is gone. And that makes me sick.
You know niggas die for equal pay, right? You know when I worked, I ain't your slave, right? You know I ain't shucking and jobbing and high-fiving. You know this ain't back in the days, right?
New at 11, College of Charleston students are speaking out against Halloween costumes being called racially insensitive.
Those costumes appeared in an online post showing several young people in those costumes, one of them being called out as a College of Charleston student.
Our Alexis Simmons live in downtown Charleston from the college. Alexis, what did they have to say after seeing these photos?
Lisa and Raphael, I spoke with some students, a part of the Black Student Union here, and they say this isn't the first time they've seen offensive Halloween costumes on campus. They're also calling for the College of Charleston to expel the students that they believed are involved.
These photos of Halloween costumes posted on social media are being called racially insensitive by the president of the College of Charleston. They show one person in a prison jumpsuit with the name Freddie Gray on the back.
First initial thought was, wow, this is very dehumanizing. Like, the black body doesn't mean much to, I mean, white people, because that's, time and time again, that's who we are constantly trying to let know that we do matter.
Freddie Gray died in Baltimore police custody. His death raised questions about police brutality, but charges were later dropped against the officers involved in the case. Bonesa Clarkson is the Black Student Union president at CFC, and Bria Dantzler is the founder of an outreach organization that serves as a voice for times like this.
I can't really sit back and believe that people don't know what they're doing when they're doing it. So it's just, it's really distasteful to see things like that. I think it's very disheartening to see things like that.
BSU says the photo of the student with the Freddie Gray jumpsuit attend CFC, and the photo was taken by a CFC student. While the person who uploaded the photo says the other students are from schools in Baltimore, and the person in the Freddie Gray costume recently graduated from a school in that area. This other photo shows a young man with the N-word written on his back. And this photo shows two people dressed in jumpsuits. The text reads, N-word broke out.
It's terrible that it's at the school I go to. So, I mean, you hate to see it anywhere, but especially somewhere here.
This is something really important. If you're not offended by the situation, you are a part of the problem. And we want to make you aware of what's going on and that it's happening right here.
And the president of the College of Charleston released a statement saying that he was disappointed that something like this was associated with this campus. He also said that it's very painful to many people. He also went on to say that they are investigating the situation, and this is the words, they determine that if the student code of conduct or any other policies were violated, that they will take appropriate action. And I've spoken with some students who say they will keep fighting for this college to take action. I am live in downtown Charleston. Alexis Simmons, Live 5 News.
The photo appears to show a student representing former San Francisco 49ers quarterback Colin Kaepernick. Kaepernick is credited with starting the kneeling during the national anthem protest that is now widespread in the NFL. However, in the top right of the picture, someone appears to be holding a gun.
It definitely doesn't belong on any college campus, that everyone, you know, is equal and should be treated equally as such.
In a statement on Facebook, College Vice President and Dean of Student Life Joyce Bylander says the costume and image were deeply offensive and reflected the exercise of very poor judgment. It goes on to say that we must all understand this action, however distasteful, is a form of free expression.
It needs to be evaluated more when it is putting another group of people down and when it is kind of taking away the context of in which something is being said.
In Bylander's statement, she asks students to answer speech with speech to find how individual choices can have a negative impact on other community members. Some students believe that's a better course of action than a suspension or probation.
It's every student's job and everybody's job to make sure that they know that it's something that's not accepted.
I do think it is something that we need to pay attention to, and that as a community, it would be our fault if we didn't kind of assess where it came from and how we can make Dickinson a better and safer place because of it.
Now the school is investigating the gun seen in the photo. Officials say that any guns, whether real or fake, are prohibited from campus. Reporting live in Carlisle, Cumberland County, Jack Ebel, Fox 43 News.
Carry me back to old Virginia. There's where the cotton and the corn and taters grow. There's where the birds warble sweet in the springtime. There's where this old darkness hard and long to go.
The assistant football coach at Short Pump Middle School is no longer on the job. This after the uproar over that offensive locker room video. NBC 12 first broke this story, and we've been following it for more than a week.
As more details are surfacing, we've now uncovered a claim of yet another racially charged situation in that same locker room weeks before the controversial Snapchat video. Tonight, only on 12, Brent Solomon speaking with a parent whose son was kicked off the team as a result. Brent, what have you learned?
Kurt, tonight I can tell you, first of all, that assistant coach parted ways with the district one day after school officials learned about that offensive video. And tonight, a parent of a former football player tells me she believes action should have been taken sooner.
Where was the supervision is what I asked for. Like, why? Where was it?
Addressing the Henrico Board of Education, parent Amelia Finn has serious concerns about Short Pump Middle School. So I caught up with her Monday to discuss them.
They had a kid literally going up to people and say, I dare you to say the N-word. I dare you to call me the N-word. I dare you to call me the N-word. Apparently that kid wasn't even of color, so I don't know, like, what the point was.
She says her son, a football player at the time, gave in.
I was like, why? Like, he said, well, I did. I said it. What can I say now?
One night after a football game, she was told it happened again, this time leading to a black player punching her son in the face. A racially charged fight unfolding in the same locker room 2 weeks before the offensive Snapchat video.
I want supervision. I want the school to acknowledge that they are responsible for not picking up the fact that there was stuff going on in the locker rooms when they shouldn't have been when they should have had adults in there.
NBC 12 has learned an assistant coach is now gone and players are no longer allowed in the locker room without an adult. Last week, the superintendent weighed in on the locker room behavior that NBC 12 was the first to tell you about.
The behavior has been described by some as horseplay, some as bullying, some as criminal behavior. But regardless of how you describe it, it's unacceptable.
Finn's son is now sitting the rest of the season off of the team.
I don't teach my kids that they get to be better than you because of the color of your skin or that you're better than them.
Back live now tonight, a district spokesperson tells me he's looking into that fight you just heard about. Meantime, I can tell you that the assistant football coach was only with the school for 5 weeks. Live in Short Pump on your side, Brent Solomon, NBC 12.
So how's the college responding to this incident?
We're having a race forum.
And what's that?
A forum on race. so we can discuss the incident and the surrounding issues of race.
So the usual lip service.
No comment.
We hear it all the time, roommates not getting along. I talked to a student tonight who said her roommate took it too far, and she believes they were racially motivated reasons. And tonight, that roommate is now under arrest.
Kind of felt unwanted and like she was giving off vibes.
Chanel Rowe is a freshman at the University of Hartford. She says since day one, she felt ignored by her roommate. It was until October 17th when Chanel was in the process of moving out at night when she bumped into her roommate.
She asked me if I was moving out, and I simply said, yup. And she made a face and said, okay. And then I seen her pick up her phone and, like, automatically just start texting.
Minutes later, Chanel says she was approached by one of her RAs who informed her of something disturbing. These pictures allegedly posted by her roommate all over social media with captions taunting at her.
Rubbing bloody tampons on my things. So, like, she posted pictures of, like, my Steve Madden bag that I've been sleeping next to the whole time on my bed with blood stains on it.
There was also this video that appears to show her roommate opening up her coconut oil.
She got me out of the room after a month of spitting in my coconut oil, putting my toothbrush places the sun doesn't shine, putting moldy clam dip in on my lotion.
Right away, Chanel reported this to public safety, and West Hartford police eventually were involved and a police report was filed. Chanel said the school originally told her they may or may not hear anything back about this incident. On October 18th, Chanel was asked to sign a no-contact agreement, meaning she would have no communication with her roommate. But she says the school also threatened to remove her from campus if she was caught talking about what happened.
I'm sharing my stuff with her, and I don't have a problem with it.
Frustrated at how this was handled, Chanel took her story to Facebook Live Monday afternoon. Since then, her story has been shared thousands of times on Facebook and Twitter. Today, the University of Hartford responded, saying, quote, upon learning of the incident, public safety immediately ensured that the victim was relocated to a safe location, notified local authorities, and provided support for their investigation. The accused student was subsequently arrested by the West Hartford Police Department, and her case will proceed through the legal process. The university will continue to precisely execute our defined process outlined in the Code of Student Conduct. The university also confirming West Hartford police arrested Chanel's roommate, which happened 2 or 3 days ago. When asked how she felt about being the victim of an alleged bullying case, she said if the roles were reversed, she believes the incident may have been played out differently.
Probably would have been locked up, like a whole bunch of stuff would have been done quickly.
Chanel told me she had been informed her now former roommate will be going through a student conduct hearing and a court case proceeding will begin. And you can expect more on this story as more updates come in. Reporting at the University of Hartford, Carmen Chow, Fox 61.
I can't tell how the way to kill Freddie Gray, right?
Baltimore is closing in again on 300 murders. It has passed that grim milestone every year since 2015. That was the year of the Freddie Gray riots, which led to the current effort to reform Baltimore police. The unrelenting carnage in the neighborhoods has eroded residents' faith in the kind of police reforms that have been pushed in big cities since Ferguson. NPR's Martin Costi has our story, which includes some strong language.
Kinji Scott is a minister and a community activist. He's riding through his neighborhood in Baltimore's Northwestern District.
See, homicide right there. See that?
Yeah.
Right there.
Scott's pointing out some balloons tied to a lamppost. It's a memorial. Other murder sites are unmarked, but he has them memorized.
Man was killed right there in the middle of the street by that tree. There's two people killed right there.
The other man in this car, the one driving, is Anthony Barksdale. He's a retired Baltimore cop. He was deputy commissioner in the years when crime was dropping. Now he spends his time blogging and tweeting about what he sees as the inaction of Baltimore police. He's frustrated at what he's now seeing in the streets that he used to patrol.
And look at this. Look at this corner. When I worked, I'd pull up and say, clear the corner.
Here he's talking about a group of people hanging out at a known trouble spot. He says Baltimore cops used to clear corners like this to reduce the likelihood of a drive-by or walk-up shooting. Barksdale turns up another street and then practically jumps out of his seat.
Look over there. here. You got people selling drugs, and the cop is sitting right there.
On the police car.
And they sat on the damn police car. That's depolicing.
Like the ones you swam
this
on,
is what you're yeah. seeing. This is depolicing.
Depolicing. In law enforcement, this is a touchy word. You hear it mostly from conservatives and critics of the Black Lives Matter movement, people who say the protesting has made police too cautious, that it's cleared the way for killers in places like Baltimore and Chicago. But here in this car, the depolicing word is being used by two black men. What's more, Kinji Scott, the community activist, says this.
People are less concerned about police reform right now than they are about their own public safety. That's why it pisses me off when people keep talking about reform. We're talking about our safety and being able to walk out our houses without being afraid of being shot.
And the man they blame for all this? The police commissioner, Kevin Davis.
I've heard those sentiments out there, particularly from the peanut galleries of the world, about the police officers depolicing or taking a knee.
Wow! Hey, yo, drama, hold up, sir. Hold up. Stop the motherfucking record. All right. I want you to Pondy replay, drama. Pondy replay. Just give him one more chance, man. Run that shit the fuck back.
I've heard those sentiments out there, particularly from the peanut galleries of the world, about the police officers depolicing or taking a knee.
Davis, who's white, is the face of the police reform process in Baltimore. He was hired from outside after the riots, and now he's implementing the federal consent decree that was negotiated with the Justice Department in January, the last of the Obama-era police reform deals.
This profession can no longer occupy geographies with cops and stop everyone who moves in hopes of catching a few bad guys.
And Davis says this new approach is doing some good things. There are fewer complaints now about excessive force and fewer shootings by officers. But reform also faces some serious headwinds. Rank-and-file cops are still angry about the failed prosecution of six officers connected with the in-custody death of Freddie Gray. There's tension with the union and fallout from new police corruption scandals. Still, the greatest challenge to reform is the stubborn murder rate. It's a tension that Davis recognizes.
Just like people don't want to see dead bodies on their streets and they don't want to see drug dealers on their corners, they also don't want to be mistreated by police officers. They also don't want their sons and grandsons being pulled out of the car and arrested for contempt of cop offenses. So we have to do both.
The thing about this debate in Baltimore and in other big cities like New Orleans and Chicago is that everyone agrees on the big picture goals. Police should be respectful and act constitutionally. The arguments come when you talk about specific tactics in specific places. Say, the old Baltimore practice of clearing corners.
When they saw the police, it was just, okay, it's time to leave.
That's Sean Schuler, also a resident of the Northwestern District, recalling how corner clearing used to work as opposed to now when the cops show up.
They pull up and you still got 20 people sitting there.
Is that bad or good?
It's bad.
Why?
It's bad because if you letting all these guys standing around, that means more things is going to happen. So as soon as the officer pull off, it's going to be a shooting.
Schuler is black and he wants police to be respectful. For example, he didn't like the way plainclothes cops here used to jump out of cars to harass people in the neighborhood. But given how bad things are right now, he thinks some of the old tactics do make sense, even if they run afoul of the federal consent decree. Martin Costi, NPR News, Baltimore.
I don't know if you may have played it or not, about the 11th city of Miami firefighters / employees who were first suspended. And I think I saw it on last night's news that six of the 11 were fired. At the time, I was just reading it because I had the sound down, down at my attempted mother's residence. And I said to myself, my sister, I bet that was racial.
And that was when I discovered the images drawn on the photos and the noose hanging over the middle photograph. The first reaction was basically disbelief.
Only on Local 10 tonight, we are hearing from the Miami firefighter who says he was harassed and discriminated against at his fire station, leading to the firings of six others. And we're also learning more about the accused firefighters who were terminated after a small noose was left draped over a defaced family photo.
Local 10 news reporter Glenna Milberg joins us live with her exclusive interview. Glenna.
Calvin and Lori, Robert Webster is a lieutenant here. Station 12 is right in the neighborhood where he grew up. He is a 17-year veteran of the fire department. Reluctantly, he spoke with us today. It's very clear, you'll see, that he considers what happened here a betrayal of the firefighter brotherhood that he so values.
First reaction was disbelief.
It was around midnight, the busy night of Hurricane Irma.
I knew it wasn't a joke because of the progression of little things that were taking place.
Lieutenant Robert Webster spotted the family photo on his desk, graphically defaced and draped with a chilling symbol of racial hate.
The images drawn on the photos and the noose hanging over the middle photograph.
The Station 12 colleagues who took the time to take the photo out of the frame to fashion a small noose from white rope they use at the station, those six received these termination letters, including a captain whose dad is a former fire chief and the lieutenant who shares Webster's office space.
I believe in this brotherhood that we throw around so much, this word, the brotherhood, the brotherhood.
Webster is a 17-year veteran of the department. We've seen him on the job and saving lives. If you could see his expression, you'd know how crushed he is to think the bonds he built have been so violated.
Stupid.
Not racist.
I don't think so. Someone playing with something that they didn't have no business playing with. Racism and the tools of hatred is like a loaded gun sitting on the table.
Webster is now wondering what the role of firefighter and the brotherhood means to those six men, and he wonders where the department goes from here.
I still believe in what we're supposed to be.
Complicit and conduct unbecoming and false statements and failure to act, those are just some of the words that you'll find in the six termination letters that the fire chief wrote to those six firefighters. They plan on holding a press conference tomorrow to fill in more of what they found and what happened here. And I want to leave you with one little bit of irony. Station 12 is actually dedicated to a firefighter named Willie Waters. Willie Waters was Miami's first hire as an African-American firefighter. I'm Glenna Milberg, live in Miami tonight, Local 10 News.
Tennessee.
I just got back from Shelbyville, Tennessee. It's a town of 20,000 people, not far from Nashville. And on Saturday, it was the site of a White Lives Matter rally. White nationalists and neo-Nazis put it together. This isn't new. There have been quite a few of these events lately. There was the deadly standoff in Charlottesville and the confrontations in Gainesville, Florida and Berkeley, California. And we wanted to explore where these powerful emotions are coming from. So we covered this rally a little differently. We spent time with two people in Shelbyville Saturday as all this played out. Let me take you to two scenes, less than a mile apart. One was a white brick building with a sign on the window, "Fresh Tortillas Here."
Would you like to come into the store?
Yeah.
Okay, just
thank you very much.
This is Gonzalez Tortilleria. The owner, Miguel Gonzalez, brought us into the room where it all happens. Three women were pushing a mountain of dough through a machine. Miguel and his team got here earlier than usual. That's because this wasn't a normal day. He wanted the tortillas made so he could get his staff home by mid-morning. They were on edge about what was about to happen in their town.
Today we start at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Wow, why so early?
Well, so some of my co-workers in the firm don't feel confident to be here later on. I respect their decision to go home and stay with their family. I cannot convince them that everything's going to be safe.
Miguel's employees are part of the diverse community in Shelbyville. It's predominantly white. There are many immigrants. And the community's become a welcoming place for new refugees. This is one reason the White Lives Matter groups decided to descend on Shelbyville. Now, Miguel, for his part, is 63. He came to the U.S. in 1972. He worked in GM plants for years in California. He became a citizen, eventually moved to Tennessee, and started this business. He said the U.S. has given his six kids a lot of opportunity.
You're proud of this country right now.
I am. All my kids are. You know, I got a son who worked for the sheriff department here in Shelbyville. I have a son who joined the army. He went to Afghanistan.
Your son is in the sheriff's department in Shelbyville?
Yes, he worked for the sheriff's
department. So does he have to work today with...
No, he worked in the juvenile detention center.
So yeah. Will he be pulled in if there's any violence or anything like that?
I'm not sure, but the whole police is in alert.
Would you worry about him if he had to go out there today?
Yes.
Miguel, though, said he was not worried about himself becoming a target. He was going to wait this day out running the register at his business. His other son, the army vet, was going to come over and keep an eye on him. The other scene was a bank parking lot right near Town Square, the rally point for White Lives Matter.
Forward!
People carrying Confederate flags and plastic riot shields were gathering and getting their marching orders.
You got a mask on your face, get the mask off your face!
There were faces of hate. The guy just to our right was dressed in military fatigues, and he wore a Hitler mustache, and he was goose-stepping like a Nazi. And then there was Jessica Atkins. She's a member of one of the organizations gathered here, League of the South.
Hi, I'm David.
I'm Jessica.
Nice to meet you, Jessica.
Nice to meet you. Yeah, thank you.
Good to meet you.
She's petite, in her 30s. She had a Confederate flag around her neck and a riot shield. She drove here from Southern Virginia, and she said there is nothing wrong with coming out in a public space to honor her race and culture.
We just want to be left alone. That's it.
Left alone?
Yeah, that's a...
who is not leaving you alone right now? Like, if... When you say, I want to be left alone, like, what is...
Well, that was, you know, back in, you know, the Confederate War.
And what about today?
Well, today you have people who, you know, I'm a Christian, a Christian background, so I have virtues and values and things that they are promoting out, you know, like on commercials and stuff like that. You know, that stuff's not right to me. I mean, I'm not...
Like what?
Know,
like, what's something that really bothers you?
You know, the LGBT stuff. I don't agree with that stuff. I mean, I don't hate those people, but if they want to be that, that's fine. But don't shove it down my throat. You know? And as far as multiculturalism, you know, every commercial you see on TV, it shows that multiculturalism. Why? Why is that? Where are they trying to paint a picture?
And we'll ask you, what is the difference in your mind between not liking multiculturalism and racism?
It's totally different.
Explain it for me.
You don't have to. I mean, like I said, the League of the South is not out to destroy another race. They're out to preserve our race. What's wrong with that? I'm not embarrassed to be white. I'm proud of what my ancestors made me, and I'm proud of what my ancestors did because they fought for my state, my homeland. You know, they created me. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. There is no problem whatsoever with being proud to be white.
Jessica now had to get going. The line for the security checkpoint was moving. Jessica and her group went through and then made their way to a street corner barricaded by police. A drone was hovering overhead, and snipers were peering down from City Hall. There were chants that conjured Nazi ideology. Counter-protesters were across the street behind their own barricade, and they were yelling back.
You're not workers. You are idiots.
After the rally was over, we wanted to check back in with Miguel Gonzalez to see how the day went for him. He was alone behind the cash register. It was a quiet day for him. He just wanted to know how the rally went. And it was interesting because I started chatting with him about one of the themes that Jessica brought up, this fear of intrusion from the outside. It was a concern not entirely unfamiliar to Miguel. He has seen refugees coming to Shelbyville, and he's welcomed them. He has also thought about the benefits they receive as soon as they arrive, like access to Medicaid.
I'm a citizen now. I'm a retired. But I already put into the fund for my pension. For my Medicare. I'm not using it now, but I'm hoping when I get old, I get some benefits. But I've been contributing already with 45 years of my life in this country. But people coming from outside, zero seniority in this country, and already have all these benefits, Medicaid. So it is something that the government needs to be careful. But hate is not the solution.
Miguel Gonzalez and Jessica Atkins, who were less than a mile apart from one another this weekend in Shelbyville, Tennessee.
context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Saturday, November 4th, 2017. So I have been told. This is our weekly compensatory call-in. Dial in if you have thoughts, observations, counter-racist suggestions. The number 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press star 6 if you would like to participate. Number again, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press star 6 if you would like to participate. A couple quick things before we get to callers who dialed in. First off, we are listener-supported counter-racist radio. Invest if you think the program is constructive. Visit the blog racism-notes.blogspot.com. Address again, racism-notes.blogspot.com. PayPal button is in the top right corner. If you're not into PayPal, drop us an email and we will get you a physical mailing address. Huge thanks to all the folks who have invested nearly a decade. The Cows has been on the air. You can also support us via our Amazon wish list, which is also linked at my blog, racism-notes.blogspot.com. You'll see the tab right there. The wish list is on Amazon under Gus T. Renegade. Thanks for all the folks who have nabbed items. Got toilet paper from my wish list today. Ecstatic. Always great to have an abundance of TP in the house. A few items that I wanted to touch on before we get to the callers. Mr. John Patash should be with us tomorrow. He wrote the book, The FBI War on Tupac Shakur and Black Leaders. Full title, U.S. Intelligence's Murderous Targeting of Tupac, MLK, Malcolm, Panthers, Hendrix, Marley, Rappers, and Linked Ethnic Leftists. Should be with us. He's been on the program twice before. Also talked about his book, Drugs as a Weapon Against Us. We'll be discussing the Black identity extremists in the context of his published work, like the titles I just mentioned. Normal broadcast time, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. We'll be looking forward to getting his thoughts as well on the ever-evolving opioid epidemic. He is a drug specialist by a drug counselor by trade, and working with trying to rehabilitate folks who have substance abuse issues. So we'll be very interested to get his thoughts. We spoke with him last time about cannabis legalization. So to get his thoughts on that, as well as the, you know, ever evolving opioid situation. 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific on Sunday. Next, the segment from the Young Turks, where they were talking about the alleged Russian trolls trying to gin up some sort of divide between us. Another great illustration. I think we talked about, you know, the patterns that we've observed in the Young Turks presentations over the years, because we've heard so many of their clips. That one, I thought, special for different reasons. Just the yelling. We talked about this with Crazy Talk, Stupid Talk. When people are yelling and cursing and using a lot of emotional appeals when they are supposed to be presenting information, right? They're supposed to be journalists. That's what they say. That to me is suspicious. That's something that, you know, I remember Dr. Marimba Ani with Yorugu. Everyone has an objective when they are presenting material to you. But when you have someone who's just doing all of that yelling, and I'm so outraged about this and angry, and I got to curse a few times. Then the things that he's saying specifically within that segment about trying to divide us. This is the broadcast compensatory call in where I say, if we could please not use metaphors, let's be specific about what we mean. What do you mean divide us? who are you talking about? He says, if you're saying white people and black people to divide us, I have no idea what you're talking about. We got cowbells galore, sexual intercourse happening between white enslavers and black enslaved people. You got that happening. Come on, Tiger Woods, come on. What are you talking about? Divide us. And then when he continues in the clip, even if you're saying, not that I believe, you know, that quote unquote Russian trolls are trying to sow dissension, racial discord in this area of the world, not that I believe that, but even if that was true, given that we are in a system of racism, white supremacy, there is a lot of evidence that whites are very easily riled up by any appeals to emotionalism with regards to niggers. The niggers are out of control. We got to do something. The legend, South Carolina legend, Pitchfork Ben Tillman, George H.W. Bush, remember his campaign with Willie Horton running the commercial, black rapist is out running amok. This is who we're going to put in the White House. You got to get me in. I'll lock up these raping niggers. Susan Smith accusing a black person of stealing her children, right? Charles Stewart, white man up in Massachusetts. I mean, it's tons of white people who they make that appeal. They assume, hey, I can trick these white people or get them to do what I want by making some sort of appeal based around white racism, white supremacy. So if they did do that, a lot of evidence that, hey, that's a good way of trying to get white people to, you know, motivate them to do things. Next, I thought and before I move on, even in that segment, I was also reminded of Dr. Kenneth O'Reilly, his book, Racial Matters, the FBI Secret File on Black America from 1960 to 1972. He's been a guest on the program a couple times. He said in that first book and when he was on the program that in the early 20th century, there was that same fear and paranoia that, the Soviets, they might try to get the Negroes because their loyalties are suspect. That was the term exactly that white people here in the States feared that their enemies, the Soviets, they would try to come over and get black people to be spies for them or do other things to cause sabotage because they had been so mistreated. So you see the same theme running for years within the system of racism, white supremacy. Now, next report, there easily could have been many more clips about Halloween, racism, white supremacy. I just included two. It easily could have been a whole lot more. That's, you know, I talked about that for years. I did think it was important, the one clip that was talking about the Halloween costume where some suspected race soldier was dressed as Colin Kaepernick with a gun pointed at his head. I did think that that was important. Violence against black people, especially violence against black people who have made some effort to address racism, white supremacy, violence, lethal violence, gun pointed at his head in the photograph. Also, and related to Mr. Kaepernick, that segment where they were talking about the efforts to reform policing in Baltimore, respect to Freddie Gray, the segment, and they talked about the depolicing, right? That was the first term they said, depolicing, meaning they think the police might not be doing their job in terms of arresting people or if they're seeing crimes and they're not doing anything about it. I think we had this same phenomenon talked about in 2014. I think this was after Eric Garner was shot and killed, choked to death, and Michael Brown Jr. was shot and killed by enforcement officers, suspected race soldiers. And they were talking about, oh, well, the police are being blamed and smeared and we're just not going to work. People were accusing, you know, certain enforcement officials, I think particularly in the New York area, of this, having slowdowns. They went from calling that depolicing in Baltimore. Then when they talked to the Baltimore commissioner, Kevin Davis, white man, suspected racist, He said the peanut galleries of the world. Interesting metaphor to talk about people who are criticizing the police department. They're not citizens who have a right to disagree. Maybe they have a viewpoint that I don't agree with, but no, the peanut gallery. And then he said these accusations of depolicing or taking a knee. I said, wow, what a metaphor. If using that phrase is being associated with police not doing their job in a city where a lot of black people are dying and suffering from violence, wow. Incredible. Again, why I encourage, really pay attention to metaphors. A lot of times you can learn a lot about how people associate things in their mind. You're making a relationship between a non-white person who's not even employed right now, who was taking a knee for a few minutes during a football game. You are equating that somehow with your frustrations in your job or how you're being treated or accused or what have you. This is now being equated with an enforcement officer not doing their job and allowing crimes to occur. Taking a knee. Fascinating. Maybe I misconstrued that. I did play it back purposely so that people could hear that again and just think about that. Fascinating. Next. The segment, or there was no segment because I couldn't find the audio. So I had to just read this one. You'll have to bear with my narration. I don't know if people heard this. It would be great if we did have any folks who read about this, heard this. Great. If not, I'm glad I could share. And again, a strong rebuke to anyone. The notion that checking the news or just trying to be informed, whether you read the newspaper or watch the news on television or if you listen to news programs, the notion that that is a waste of time is dangerous. Reported in the news this week, FBI, a man who praised Dylann Roof threatens to kill Senator Tim Scott. This is from November 1st. The Federal Bureau of Investigation has a Georgia man in custody who is accused of threatening the life of a South Carolina senator. According to records from the United States District Court, on October 23rd, Jason Kenneth Bell, 40, white, communicated a threat to an employee of Senator Tim Scott's office. The documents indicate Bell said, and I'm going to read this without censoring, and there are profanities and what have you in it, but it is dangerous to censor racism, white supremacy. So I'm going to read this as it is. The documents indicate Bell said, "I am going to kill that motherfucker," after calling the office to complain about the senator's stance on neo-Nazism. Below is an excerpt from the court documents. Yeah, he's an ignorant motherfucking. Now, the problem that I have with the censoring, they have a word that's been redacted here. They give you one letter, that this word starts with the letter G. I don't know what that is. I don't know what the G word is in reference to black people. If anybody knows what the G word is, if there is a profane word that starts with a G that I am ignorant of, inform me, please. But this is the problem I have with sanitizing, because this is, in my view, pertinent information. We're talking about a United States senator, and they don't even have that many black United States senators. I would like to know every single detail. And this is a court document. So, hey, continuing, I can't stand that motherfucker saying that neo-Nazis and white people are the problem. I'm going to kill that motherfucker, end quote. Investigators said that Bell then hung up but called back 15 minutes later and identified himself while leaving approximately 10 voicemail messages at the office. The FBI said Bell has been the subject of multiple investigations after past threatening phone calls to the NAACP and local news outlets. In these phone calls, Bell frequently references and praises Dylann Roof, who was convicted of the mass shooting at Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church in Charleston, an FBI special agent said in the court documents. In August 2017, U.S. Capitol Police worked with law enforcement in Cochran, Georgia, to conduct a welfare check on Bell, who had threatened self-harm and left concerning messages to a member of Congress, according to investigators. Investigators said Bell admitted to the phone calls earlier in 2017, but said he was not violent and was only trying to have a conversation. He said he has contacted members of Congress for 6 years regarding untruths of black victimization, in quotes, and will continue to do so until he is understood, the FBI said. The documents state Bell was also arrested in DeKalb County in March 2017 after making threatening phone calls to the CNN office in Atlanta. Bell was taken into custody in Bleckley County, Georgia, after the threat against Scott before being transferred to the custody of the FBI. He is charged with making threatening interstate communications. The office of Senator Tim Scott released the following statement on the incident. The senator greatly appreciates the efforts of the Capitol Police and the FBI to keep folks safe every day. Any questions regarding this matter should be directed to the FBI. End of the report, and they have a mugshot of Jason Kenneth Bell, not identified as a terrorist in this report. I will only add that out of all of the things that you heard, all of the news clips, the threats against Senator Tim Scott in South Carolina, out of all of those threats, the only incident that I heard referred to as an incident of terrorism was the attack in New York City. Everything else, including a white man opening fire in a Walmart in Colorado, everything else that I saw happen this week, not referred to as acts of terrorism. One more thought with Senator Scott, because he is someone that I have heard rebuked and attacked often as an Uncle Tom sellout. I think he's even been called Uncle Tim sometimes and criticized for his views or certain positions that he's taken. In my view, number one, any non-white person is a victim of racism, white supremacy for a black person. Even if I don't agree with that black person, I understand that that is still a black person in the system of white supremacy. Dylann Roof could have this person in their crosshairs at any moment. I'm going to keep that in mind, and I'm not going to call them names and bash them, even if I don't agree with what their views are. Regardless of what they're doing, they're still a victim of racism, white supremacy. Next, with regards to Senator Scott, I am pretty certain that I have heard black people call him a coon. And even if it's not Senator Scott, I've heard so many other black people, including yours truly, referred to as a coon. That clip where they had, it was a mom in Chicago. She was talking about her son being terrorized by some little white race soldier who had been calling her child names and making videos where he was going. I think it was the Lion King that was playing where one of the characters was saying Hakuna Matata. And he was saying, coon, a coon, a coon. We should really pause and take a moment when we get frustrated. Some of us, hopefully not many cows listeners, but we should really, in my view, pause the next time when we get frustrated and think I'm going to take out my frustration by identifying a black person as a coon. Where would I have learned such behavior from? Who has a good time and is known for sitting around and calling black people a coon? Where would we get such behavior? For this program, to remind folks once again, if we could not use metaphors, it's been my experience. One, you can learn a lot. Make sure I emphasize, you can learn a lot in terms of how people think just by paying attention to the metaphors they use. That said, I've also observed racists frequently will use metaphors to practice deception, white supremacy. They will compare things that are not equivalent. And scream, shout, insist that, oh, yes, these two things are darn near twins. They're identical. And that's not the case at all. Victims, non-white people, including Gus T, frequently, we are still learning. We have not come to conclusions on certain matters, so we're still thinking. And sometimes we will use a metaphor in the hopes that that correctly conveys our thoughts. Often it does not. Sometimes the best thing is to stop and think a little more and then come to a conclusion when you can logically present your ideas with detail, with specifics, where you don't have to use a lot of metaphors and analogies and other things to hopefully get your point conveyed to illustrate what it is you want to say. Last week, there were a lot of metaphors. I'm not sure if people were especially excited about a particular issue. I know sometimes when there's a topic that is emotional, people can employ more metaphors, but if counter-racism is supposed to be about being mindful about what we say, recognizing that words are important, one thing is we should be mindful. If it's, okay, I'm going to at least be mindful about what I'm saying with regards to metaphors, there shouldn't be a time where metaphors are just being used each and every sentence or every other sentence, and they were being used profusely during last week's broadcast. So if we could be mindful of that, much obliged. If you could be mindful also, if you're in a noisy environment, if you could use your mute button, that would be greatly appreciated. Just helps to preserve the audio quality of the program. If you can say whatever you need and then mute your line. Also, if you could take 5 minutes to share your thoughts, make sure everybody gets an opportunity to speak. If you have additional comments you want to share once everyone has spoken at least once, if you want to add in additional comments or questions, that is great. We should have time. With that, first few folks who dialed in with a hand up, line should be open. Proceed.
Hello, can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Hey, greetings. This is Puff. I have a question for Gus. Was the word they were using guineas?
In which, do you remember which segment it was?
No, I'm saying, what you were saying, what was the G word?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. We can look at the report and see if that would work. But he said it was preceded by motherfucking. So it would be motherfucking guineas. You think that's what it is? It seemed like he was talking about Senator Scott, though. So it would be motherfucking guinea. You think that might have been what it was?
Yes, because I've heard that word used one time in The Godfather, where it was the scene where the sister, played by the actress Talia Shire,
mm-hmm.
they were Italians. And so Italians are seen by white people as not non-Aryan. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
They normally have black hair and dark eyes, in other words, and olive skin or whatever.
Right.
And so he was calling her a guinea bee in that scene. So that's the only word with G I can think of.
I thought, appreciate that, Puff. I thought, now I could be in error, I thought the term guinea was used almost exclusively for quote-unquote Italians. I thought, in fact, in that same film, they refer to black people as mulies, I thought. That was the one that they used for black people. But you think he could have been referring to Senator Scott as a guinea?
That was the only derogatory term I could think of that starts with a G. That was it.
Okay. Maybe
that
it was.
That was my little 2 cents or whatever.
Metaphor. I appreciate it. That could be it. Maybe he was. And see, that's why I prefer just write it out. We're adults. It's a court document. What did he say? I mean, and he's threatening to kill a United States senator. I want to know all the details. If he said guinea, you know, just write that out. What's the problem? You said that was it, Puff? That was all you wanted to share?
Yeah, that's it. I just wanted to throw that out there.
Okay. Appreciate it. Guinea, one submission for the G word that could have been written in. Other folks that we've not heard from at all, if you have a hand up, proceed.
May I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Hello, thank you. Hello, everyone, and thank you for taking my call. This is Rev from Ohio. I'd actually recently moved. I moved from Ohio to Nevada, so I'm actually, my commentary is about all my observations that I've seen in between Ohio and Nevada. The first thing was it kind of like the road signs, like the electric ones, where they say like road work ahead, stuff like that. I feel like this might, these phrases might qualify as stupid talk, and they have to do with the holidays. So like in Illinois and Missouri, the sign said, I have three, hocus pocus, drive with focus, texting and driving bring toil and trouble, and don't be a phone zombie. I thought these were ridiculous. If you don't, if you want people to just drive safely, you could have just said that. The other things were, front page news in Missouri. There was this article and it said Pacific officers face rise in heroin calls for overdoses in past month. And the paper was, it's called the Missourian, and it was it's an article from October 29, 2017. And just a few points from the article. It said the police chief, which was a white man, he called the heroin epidemic a cancer that is killing vulnerable citizens. And they used this word citizens in the article a couple of times, which I feel like they're referring to, of course, white people. They also kind of describe the deaths, which was 9, which I don't see how they would qualify that as an epidemic when, of course, I guess any white life that's more than one, it's an epidemic. And of course, that police chief wanting his officers to carry Narcan and also provided training. Another thing that the police chief said was, I understand addiction, but what would cause an individual to drive into a neighborhood most of us wouldn't feel safe in, buy something from a stranger on the street, and inject it into their body the first time? And I found that hilarious because right there he's showing his racism, us meaning white people, driving to a neighborhood that's not safe. From my understanding, that would be, you know, non-whites, of course. And the last thing, there was a white woman, an older person in this area. She says, our citizens are dying from this. We need to find a way to stop it. Once again, they're using the word citizen, and from my understanding, meaning white people. The last thing, when I was in Arizona, we had to stop for gas, and it was me and my mother and my younger sister. And me and my younger sister, we went into the gas station, and I happened to point out to her there was this license plate that had an American flag and a Confederate flag kind of intertwined. And I know I've heard, I think on Black Talk News, Mr. Scotty Reed, he had said before that, you know, the South has never lost. And I pointed that out to her to let her know, like, you know, just because we're supposed to be in this quote unquote post-racial society, this is how white people still think. And of course, the people at the gas station, they definitely seem very racist, either suspected racist or outright racist. That's all I want to share for this week. Thank you for allowing me to share.
Appreciate that, Red. No longer Red in Ohio, Red in Nevada. I don't know if you're in Vegas or not. Vegas is one of the tackiest places I have ever been in life. If you are in Nevada, I would strongly encourage you to visit the Grand Canyon. That is one of the best things that I've seen in life. I had the pleasure of seeing the Grand Canyon at sunrise. It is amazing. I think you can camp. I think if I went again, I would want to camp, but I would definitely encourage you to check out the Grand Canyon. Is this your first time being on the West Coast, or have you been out before?
Actually, no, I've lived in Nevada before, and okay. I don't like it. So I definitely share your sentiment, but yeah, that's definitely one of the things. And I've noticed the racism here. And actually the last thing was, I've noticed with the signs, and what I was going to start reporting on is the progress from the Vegas shootings, is that now they have, these signs that say pray for Vegas, and they also have this hashtag called Vegas Strong. Not sure what the Vegas Strong means, but I'll be working on that too. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Las Vegas, legalized cannabis, legalized prostitution, wild, wild west. Other folks who dialed in with the Grand Canyon is amazing. I would encourage anybody, if you end up being in Vegas for whatever reason, if you have the time, go to the Grand Canyon. It is amazing. Other folks who dialed in with a hand up, line should be open. Yes, sir.
Oh, yes, thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners and callers. I was just thinking about that clip. I think the race soldier was from the New Jersey area, and I don't know if that was like some kind of a social media post or something where, or was it, I think they were saying it was an audio clip where they caught the white person, I guess, making a general threat to black people about them being of low to no value and they should be mowed down or something like that. Was that like an audio clip that was like releasing with us?
Apparently they had a spy. We talk about getting those recorders and what have you. Apparently this enforcement officer in New Jersey who had been a race soldier, it seems documented for decades, 30 years approximately, someone finally decided to record him. And so they spent a year with their recorder and just recording different segments. And so you heard a little snippet from, I guess it was a mole, one of his coworkers, who decided to record some of the comments that he would make about black people.
Wow. Cause yeah, that is a very good documentation tool for us to use from a lot of these gadgets that I know we like to go out and purchase. They just, I guess, released a new iPhone, what, iPhone X or something like that. We can really be utilizing these devices for a constructive purpose. And I think it was the roommate who had that that encounter with the race soldier female, and she was just constantly trying to, she was poisoning her through, I guess, like toiletry products and stuff, and just being very, like, deceptive. And people still to this day just think that racists can only just be, you know, past the age of 72 or something, or people who are just senile, who are old in age, and they can't be younger people who happens to be someone's roommate. And it's just it's very sad to know that there are a lot of victims who really don't have that understanding that this person, even in that, you know, situation or many other scenarios, who really want to try to do harm to you. And she did it like she wasn't going to get in any kind of trouble. But it did seem like the black female was having a bit of a tough time, I guess, trying to get expedited justice, but that's to be expected. And I wanted to make a quick observation of the Florida Gators football team. They just fired their coach and they put a black person in charge. I just wanted to like just make a little quick point on that. And you know, we lost another game and they put in a black quarterback at the same time, and I think that was very racist in my opinion. So maybe they probably will get people to think, well, you know, we can't hire a black coach to see, you know, the Negroes help us lose the game. So and I think that word, the G word, is gorilla. I think that's what the word is. Maybe that'll fit in there. Do you think that could be the word?
It certainly would, motherfucking gorilla. That's what it would have said. But why would they redact gorilla? I mean, what? I mean, why would they take that word out if it was gorilla?
Because I'm thinking like how, you know, when it comes to those, I guess, you know, they'll use the term like slur or something on an article. And I think people will get maybe alarmed or whatever, even though they use the, you know, the curse word and stuff. I have noticed that before where, like, you know, nigger will be like in an asterisk or something like that, you know, it'll be redacted, and, you know, coon or, you know, porch monkey or something like that. You know, the primate, any form of a primate races use those kind of terms toward black people. And I think they'll just try to do that, like you had mentioned, to just, you know, censor it, to try to hide it. So people, I guess, may not figure it out. That's the thing I would come up with, that I came up with.
Logical. That is logical. That would make sense. And that's, I would be even more offended if it was gorilla. And they said, oh, no, we can't put gorilla. Like, oh, my gosh. Like, they have made, you know, whole television shows and movie empires around calling black people gorillas. Why are we going to get timid now in a court document where a United States senator is being threatened with assassination? Why are we going to get timid now if it was gorilla? Like, come on. That another may, in my view, that would be a pretty major act of racism if they redacted the term gorilla. Did you, was that the extent that you wanted to share, or did you have more comments?
Yes, sir. Yeah, I agree with what you just said. Like, it does pretty much promote a lot more confusion, because they will use that word in any other type of context. But in this one, they'll say, maybe, you know, we want to keep that word and, you know, hidden, and they'll talk about political correctness and we don't want to hurt any feelings, but they'll reveal other words that are just as derogatory that people wouldn't want to read. So very tricky, I guess, tactics, I guess, that they'll engage in. But that's all I had.
Appreciate that. Words are important. Words are important. Other folks who dialed in with a hand up, you had commentary. Line should be open. Proceed.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir. Thomas in New York.
Good evening, Josh. I was thinking of gorilla too. And I was thinking maybe they spelled it the G-U-E way. You know, which means like the, I guess, some type of militant against the government, you know, guerrilla forces. And then I was also thinking jigaboo, even though that's a J, but sometimes the word comes from a gigaboo, which is that colorful character from that book. But, yeah, I think it's guerrilla. And, you know, these are Darwinists, white people. You know, they believe that they evolved from apes that haven't evolved since. So, it could be. I wanted to talk about the clip you played with the Russia. I didn't hear all of them because I was traveling to the plantation. I'm trying to get here early because the trains don't act right on the weekend. Now, if anyone who thinks that Russia is behind the racial tensions in America, any white person that thinks that is practicing racism, and anyone who thinks that Russian propaganda caused Hillary Clinton the election, they're insane. She won 88% of the black vote, but she lost the white vote at a higher clip than Obama did, which includes white women. And she is a white woman. And let's not forget that a week before the election, the president-elect, or the president-to-be, they revealed a tape with him claiming he grabs women by their vaginas, and that didn't affect his standing with the white women at all. So this is just something I want to talk about later in the show, a term I call white obfuscation. They're obfuscating from the reality of what it is, and they're doing this deliberately. The NY police, New Jersey police, now they were talking about the chief of police. It sounded like in the Trenton area, statutes of limitation don't apply to fraud. If these people were put in jail under false pretenses, then the statute of limitation starts as soon as the fraud started, which would have been whenever these tapes and things were released. So I don't agree with that. Maybe if it was police misconduct as far as abuse, there's a statute of limitation. But I don't agree with that either. They're in a position of authority. They're paid by the people to enforce certain codes and ordinances. And therefore, they should be held to a higher standard. If they do something wrong, there shouldn't be a statute of limitation on it. I read a report this week about the BIEs, the notorious BIEs.
Now, this one was talking about the black man, what do they call those people? You know, the Black Congress in Washington, and they asked to meet with the head of the FBI to discuss this. And they asked for this meeting on October 23rd, and they've yet to have it. These are your black elected officials. And I don't think that much will come out of the meeting, because these are the same people that voted overwhelmingly for the Clinton-Klein bill. Most of them the same people that's still there. And, you know, I don't see much coming out of it. Another report I read today, and I thought about, you know, this is just how white people do things. Now, when I was a teenager, there was an anomaly that happened during the Olympics when they had a little black gymnastic star named Dominique Dors performing a floor exercise and winning a gold medal. And, you know, we were all, you know, up, like, happy, you know, to see this sister on TV doing her thing. And then later on in my life, decades later, you got Gabby Douglas. And then the next Olympics after that, you got Simone. So now they are doing away with the people judging the gymnastics in the Olympics. Now they're going to let the artificial intelligence judge the gymnastics. And like I say all the time, artificial intelligence is soon going to just be a code word for white supremacy, because who's programming this stuff? So this is just a way for them to cheat, in my opinion, cheat black people in all ways of life using this artificial intelligence. And white people are totally, you know, going to be like, hey, that's what the computer said. No one's going to take into account that they're the people programming and coding this stuff, writing these algorithms that are going to be racist. And like I said, I had something I wanted to talk about. I wanted to introduce a new term to the context of white supremacy. Also, if the young scholar is on this week, I did still have a question for him. I've been waiting. And I'll mute my line. Thank you, Gus.
Yes, sir. I'll look out. I'll drop him an email and let him know you have a question as well. Other folks we have not heard from at all, if you have a hand up, line should be open.
Can I be heard?
Heard.
Go ahead, sir.
See, I think the one caller yielded the floor. Was that Roz? Were you the other person that was speaking?
No, but I did have something I wanted to get in. Somebody else chimed in before me, but it wasn't me who spoke up as well.
Oh, okay. Well, since they're not speaking now, Roz, proceed.
Okay, no problem. Thank you. Greetings to you, Gus, and to the other callers and listeners. Yes, it's interesting in reference to that term that was the G word. The term Guinea actually is a term for black people. That is what they used to call the western coast of Africa. It was a region extending from the Gambia River to Gabon. And also, Guinea is a term that was used to describe a type of gold that white people found in Africa, and they found that those black people brought that same type of gold to America. The original term was guanini, and that term was actually eventually changed to Guinea. And that's also written of in Dr. Ivan Van Sertima's book, They Came Before Columbus. Also, one of the reasons that they call Italians Guineas is because they have black blood. Not just the black blood of the people from Hadas, also known as Carthage with Hannibal, but also the original inhabitants of Crete were Egyptian people. So that term Guinea is kind of like a way of not just describing black people from Africa, but it's also making that connection to the original black people that were in Italy as well. So I just wanted to chime in with that, and I just found that to be interesting because I think it could be gorilla, but I also thought it might have been Guinea as well, because that is an old term for black people specifically, and also because, it was also related to a type of gold that they found that had a certain percentage of gold, tin, and another and a third metal, and it used to have a sweet taste to it. Christopher Columbus's people talk about that. He talked about that in his journals. So I just wanted to give that information, and I'll mute my line for now, and hopefully I'll get a chance to chime in later.
Right on. Appreciate that, Roz. The caller who yielded the floor a moment ago, if you want to proceed.
Thank you very much, Gus. This is V from Central New York. Peace to you. Peace to all of the listeners and all of the callers tonight. I actually had a word that I was thinking about that could have went there. Gus, where was the person from who made the statement, which they blanked out?
Well, the person was arrested in Georgia, threatening a U.S. senator from South Carolina.
I believe the word may be either Geech or Geechee. The Geeches or the Geechee are former slaves who settled along the coast of Mid-Atlantic and Georgia state, or Mid-Atlantic states and Georgia, being a southernmost state. They are also a group of former slaves which settled along the islands of those states. And many of the people who come from that region, at least for a generation back, used to still call themselves Geeches or Geechee. That's my take on that. What do you think?
Also is reasonable. That would match the region. I have heard that term used to describe black people in that particular area. Certainly could be. And I mean, certain Georgia, the South Carolina, that region, I think that term is used to describe a group of black people in that area specifically. So that certainly could also fit. And again, just emphasizing, I would rather have the exact details. So you don't have to do the guessing game to try to figure out what this guy said. Court document. Let's just get all the details.
Yeah, I would much rather too. Moving past that quickly, there was a murder which is capturing the headlines in Central and Western New York, in my old neighborhood, actually in the neighborhood above my old neighborhood, in Wayne County, New York. A 17-year-old white girl was killed by her 19-year-old black boyfriend. The comments on social media have been mixed, but the comments by some have been disastrously racist. And even when there attempts to be an argument back against those statements, no one, most people point out that the person who is making the statement is ignorant. And I watched this for a little bit over a day before I finally chimed in and said, there is no ignorance here. This person is not stupid. You're not changing his mind. He is racist. Let's say it. Let's be frank about it. Whether you're black or you're white, this person is racist. And if you can't say that he's racist and you're white, and you still want to claim that he's ignorant, then you're part of the problem. I don't need to deal with you. I haven't seen many responses to those comments, but several of the comments or the conversations which I commented on seemed to cease after I made those statements. There was no more argument on whether or not the person was ignorant or whether or not the person was racist. Nobody talked, which I think was telling in and of itself. To broader matters, Global Research, which is an investigative website, an investigative journalism website out of Canada, posted a really good article earlier in the week on a congressional committee hearing on the intelligence. I wasn't sure. Unfortunately, I don't have it before me. I can't pull it up on my phone right now. But why it's important to us as black people is they address specifically the black identity extremist concept and made it very well known that the intelligence agencies view people who identify themselves as black. They view us as a threat. And as I said, I can't pull up the article on my phone right now, but all you have to do is just Google global research and then intelligence conference from this past week. It was 6 hours long. I haven't had a chance to go through the transcript yet, but all the reviews that I have read, including one written up by the New York Times, suggest that it's something that we as black people may need to look at very closely as COINTELPRO is returning and may ultimately be somewhat behind these, quote, increased murder rates in these inner cities where some activists who were very instrumental in setting up the protests seem to be getting swept up or caught up. Both of those are metaphors. Seem to be getting either murder or arrested as part of these crime waves. That's all I have tonight. Peace to you all, and peace to God.
Much obliged. We'll check that out. It was the global... What was it again? Global Change Research Report?
GlobalResearch.ca. GlobalResearch.ca.
Great. Much obliged. Other folks that we have not heard from at all, if you have commentary, proceed.
Have you heard?
Yes, sir.
Call Can it be heard? Oh, excuse me. Go ahead.
Firefighters right. Yielding.
Good evening, everybody.
Good evening.
Good evening, Jim 138. I have two other submissions for the, three. Three other submissions for the G word that we're trying to ascertain. I looked them up on Wikipedia for what it's worth. You got Gable, Gollywog, and probably the one of the strongest ones is Groid, which is derived from Negroid. I'm inclined to agree with V from Central New York, Wagichi, like they're taking into account the context in the area that is from. And that's all I would like to share tonight. Thank you.
I was thinking Groid, too. I was thinking Groid. That might be my choice for the moment. Groid, maybe. Have to think a little more. Retired firefighter, do you want to proceed?
Yes, sir. Greetings, everyone. My guess would be... because it's a very popular term on the East Coast, especially in the southern part of this place that is called America, the word Geechee. It's quite popular. I've heard some of the different meanings. Basically, my thoughts on it is that these were non-white black people who retained a lot of their quote-unquote African culture through song and dance, also sometimes in dress. And they occupied, as I heard someone say, the islands that are close to the main shores in like South Carolina, Georgia. One of the notable people that we all would know is the great Jim Brown. His people, he grew up on a place off the coast of Georgia that's called St. Simons. The direct racism, white supremacy involved with these non-white black people is that, of course, white people are steadily making gains on to usurp all of their property, land, of course, because there's, you know, beach areas, for one thing. That'll be the first thing come to my mind, because for the most part, that term is associated with non-white black people in that part of the world. I've heard someone mention about the non-white black male who is the present coach at the University of Florida. I know him personally. His name is Randy Shannon. I think he also was the first black coach, head football coach at University of Miami. Racism, white supremacy was definitely enacted on him quite a bit as the head coach at University of Miami. I've been knowing him since he was a high school kid, and I coached at another high school back during that time. I think the position he's in now is would make him the first black person in that head coaching position, although he's just in an appointed situation right now until the season is over with. Then they would, you know, come up with someone who they pick. I would be surprised if it is him, although he is a very good person, in my opinion, and a very good football coach. But that's just not what white people do as far as hiring a lot of non-white black males as head football coaches on the Division I and professional levels, as much as they should. Actually, all of them should be, as far as non-white black males can be. The player employees, I don't see why the head coach can't be that also. But anyway, that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Appreciate that, retired firefighter. Other folks who yes, sir.
I think there was another caller, female.
Oh, go ahead, and I'll come back after you, sir. Thank you.
All right. Awesome. Okay, this is Ken Steele. I am in Chino, California, and I wanted to start off by saying that I think that the G word may be groid. And the reason why I suspect it's groid is because, one, it's censored. I don't think that Geechee would be censored. I think, like, Gullah and Gullah Geechee, I think there was even when I was a kid, there was a TV show called Gullah Gullah Island, and I think they mentioned the Geechee people. So I don't think that Geechee would be censored, but I do believe that groid would be censored. And what makes me believe that it's groid as well is that he made frequent references to Dylann Roof. And Dylann Roof, in the white supremacist movement, is a hero in the online contingent of the racist movement. Online characters like Dylann Roof and have turned him into some sort of a hero. And these sort of people, they make frequent use of the word groid. So online racists, especially those who are of the violent variety and the online community and participants in online racist communities, they like the word groid, and I can see them going ahead and censoring that. What has me calling this week, or what I wanted to talk about, was the JFK files were recently released by the Trump administration. And the interesting thing that I've noticed about these files is that the biggest story coming from them is the confirmation of all of the reports that Martin Luther King participated in, orgies and all sorts of sexual infidelities during the civil rights movement. The FBI apparently noted this and documented this, and the release of the JFK files included, I guess, more information regarding the sexual exploits of Martin Luther King. So imagine that. They tease for all this time that they're going to release information about JFK and his assassination, and the biggest story to come out of that is about Martin Luther King. So, you know, that is classic system of white supremacy move. Some people in conversations that I've had referred to it as the switcheroo. I don't know what would be the most accurate term to describe what took place in that whole series of events, but it's something that has left me astonished and disgusted, to be honest. And I guess that's what I will leave off with for now. There's one more thing that I wanted to include. All of these reports about Russians supposedly being behind the unrest and the discontent that black people are having toward our white victimizers, you know, honestly, that whole line about the Russians being behind it, it's been noted that this is an old racist line that dates back a few decades into the Cold War. And it's very interesting that, you know, that they're bringing these up. I think all of those sites, from my interpretation online, would seem like they're more, it seems like white people are more fascinated with those, the websites that they listed. And it would be white people who would use those websites as examples of black people being violent towards police, just these nonsensical, you know, anti-white messages and whatnot, and anti-police messages. And I think that they would just use that to as examples. And I believe that some of them were behind setting them up. Some of those websites were set up by domestic racists that may have been paid off by Russians. I mean, we already know that the Russians paid off a black person to go ahead and make that website or to make the song for their website. Just it's just really, really nuts how they do this. But all of that would be very easy to pull off. You can go to websites like Fiverr and hire black people to take proof pics of you. You can hire black people to make little rap songs that of things that you want. And you can go to these websites and hire that for very cheap. So it doesn't surprise me that they're doing this. And also, with all of that disinformation, I think that much of the Russian disinformation is coming in the form of these conspiracy theories. And I think these conspiracy theories are being released and being purposefully targeted at black people. And I think that it's white supremacists that are in Russia and that are here domestically. And I think one of the bigger, bits of disinformation that I think that they're, you know, disseminating specifically to black people has been this flat earth theory. I think that suspected racist white supremacists, they've been purposefully pushing that toward black people just to for more of us to be confused and more of us to believe in sort of magical thinking and magical logic. And it all plays into what I was commenting earlier on a previous broadcast about what's happening with the Las Vegas shooting. I think that there are concerted armies of people online that are devoted to spreading disinformation specifically targeted at black people. And you have to be very leery of what it is that you read on some of these websites. If a URL has the word truth in it, don't believe it. Thank you, and I'll go ahead and mute my line at this point.
Appreciate that. Caller in Ohio?
May. Yeah, okay. Thank you so much for taking my call, Gus. Hello to you, to the other callers and listeners. Just want to say to Red, formerly of Ohio, you know, congratulations on her and her family's moved to Nevada, and prayerfully that everything will work out for them. also, too, want to remind everybody that, you know, time does go back tonight. So, you know, and then save like saving time. A couple of things I just want to hit on real quick. The story about the police and whatever the guy called it, I can't remember that. I guess in a sense, like they're not working as hard or whatever it was that they called it. But I, on the clip, when the guy said, let me run around the corner, and he see all these people on the corner and said how, I think he was aware and the guys were sitting on a police car or they were sitting on the corner, the police would come up and the guys, you know, they people would not leave. So he said it was a time when he was a police officer. You come around the corner or, you know, you see people hanging on the corner, they move away. You know, people just walk away. I just kind of feel like today, if they're not walking away, that's because a lot of those guys know a lot of those police officers, and those police officers are doing things. And remember, we always hear that, you know, the crime is the highest in the Black community and that the Black community has the most police officers in it. Now, that's just illogical. If there are more police officers in the Black community and the crime is high, then there's something wrong. Then to me, that means the police got to be doing something with that crime. They help with the crime. So if the guys are not running because the police come, then that means a lot of those guys know police. They, you know, and I just think that the police are doing things, you know, that the police are doing things where, you know, now, you know, they just don't worry about them. So, you know, I think the police did on a lot of this foolishness and they try to present this image that, you know, like the Black community is just irredeemable, you know. But I just thought that was kind of interesting. As far as the church is concerned, because I really don't care for them, and I definitely get what you said, the raising of the voice, the using of foul language, you know, because, you know, and it's always using Black people because we're the ones, you know, that keep the shows on TV, let's be for real about it. And I agree with you when he said about, oh, trying to divide us, you know, and I sit up and listen, I'm like, well, who is this us that they're trying to divide, you know, as if Blacks and whites, and we're just all so happy together in this. And that's you know, that's just far from the truth. As far as the papers, Sister Steele mentioned them, I just saw that today about the release of the JFK papers. I was looking at something on Twitter. And I'm going to be honest with you. I'm not saying that Martin Luther King was a saint. I think he was a human, just like any other man. But I just don't think there's much truth to that story, you know, by all these orgies. And I remember something about white prostitutes and, you know, and something I read and it was like $50 and Black prostitutes, how they would, you know, break it down like that. And I just think that a lot of that stuff with Hoover, it was just made up stuff, just made up. And at that time, at least particularly when President Kennedy was the president, Robert Kennedy was the attorney general. I think a lot of these stories about King, excuse me, were just made up to tarnish, you know, his reputation. And keep in mind now, I'm not saying that he was perfect. I'm not saying that. But I do think a lot of that stuff was just made up stuff. But I did saw that, and it is rather interesting that the papers are released, and, you know, probably one of the biggest stories or, you know, bigger stories that come out of that is about Martin Luther King's sex life. We know that John F. Kennedy is probably one of the biggest whores that occupied the White House at one time. We know that for a fact, but nobody's talking about that. And then I want to say about the situation with the girl, Jasmine, and her roommate. And I was listening to a YouTube video last night of a guy who did a story on this. And I just want to put this point out there for all of us. If we know Black people that go to these colleges and they have white roommates, and if they are like, they need to check their stuff, and if they are like sick, you know, being sick periodically or more so than what they normally would be and things like that, they may need to check out what their roommate might be doing to their things. You know, a lot of times toothbrushes, you know, you this is your dorm room and you'll put your toothbrush in your cup and leave it sitting out. And, you know, you just never know, you know, what kind of craziness could be going on with that. So it's just something that, you know, I know all of us probably know people that have children in college, that have white roommates. And, you know, we may, you know, just want to pass the word, you know, maybe you need to, for males, you know, you get the, you know how males, you get your man bag. That's what I call the man bag, where you can put your toiletry articles. And that you probably need to do that and then take it out the bathroom and put it in a place where you that you may even be able to lock up. And it's the same with girls, you know, females, the bags that we can get with the cosmetic bag or something that you can get from Walmart, stuff like that, where you can put your toothbrush, toothpaste, other stuff in there, and may have to put it in places that you have a key that you can lock up. May want to be careful about your food if you don't eat it all. If you don't have a friend that could, you know, or somebody that can put it up for you, you might just have to dispense with it instead of keeping it in your room. It's sad, but I mean, I could only call that white girl a filthy beast. And that's just how I look at her. I mean, it's just filthy. I mean, I don't even think filthy is a strong enough word for what she did to that young lady. And I don't necessarily even think that could not be the norm. You know what I'm saying? And so I just want to give that warning now, for, you know, to pass it on, because a lot of us probably do have friends or, you know, that we know have friends and stuff that have children that have white dorm mates, and they need to protect themselves. Anyway, thank you for taking my call, and I'll mute my line. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Caller in Ohio. Number again, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *6 if you would like to participate. Please do not wait until the last minute if you have a comment or question you would like to share. Did we miss anybody? Anybody have a hand up that we have not heard from at all? If anybody that has been listening in, you have a comment, question you want to share, we should hear from you now as opposed to waiting. Caller at 5429. Did you have commentary?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes. This is Walter from Detroit, Michigan. And I wanted to reiterate the point the previous caller made about the young lady who had that white roommate. I was listening on the news, and they were trying to frame the narrative as her being bullied. I think it was an act of terrorism, and I think we should acknowledge it as such. And also another point I just noticed when we are talking about our, well, not all, you don't do it, Gus. When we're talking about our ancestors from this country, we sometimes say slaves. I think we should, you know, correct that and say enslaved, because they were not slaves, they were actually enslaved. And that's all I wanted to say. I'll meet my line.
Right on. Other folks that we have not heard from at all, if you have commentary, line should be open. Proceed. Did we nab everybody? Anybody that we missed completely? Grant, I'll assume we got everyone. I did want to make sure with the JFK files that were released this week, they had a report in the Washington Post just within the last 24 hours. They had a King biographer who was saying that a lot of the bits in the file that are about Dr. Martin Luther King, a lot of those are inaccurate and false statements that are in those files about him, that are just kind of promoting the same lies that they've been promoting for years about him. He wasn't talking about the sexual allegations of sexual promiscuity. He was talking about all of the other things that they were accusing him of. However, if you've got a campaign where an acknowledged part of what the COINTELPRO strategy was to discredit black people like Dr. King and the Black Panther Party, George Jackson, we talked about him yesterday, lots of black people. If that's the campaign that you have, then it's reasonable to think that you could have lied about other things, not just, you know, him being a communist or whatever the case. Maybe you lied about these affairs and orgies as well. And I know it's Miss Ava DuVernay in her film that they bring this up, you know, his alleged sexual misconduct, him having affairs or whatever. I am reminded of Coretta Scott King's autobiography, which we read on the book club, My Life, My Love, My Legacy. She emphatically, unequivocally denied that Dr. King had any affairs on her, cheated on her. She emphatically denied all of that and took the position that that was just another part of the malicious campaign to malign her husband. I remember we talked about that in the book club. I think some of the folks here present were with us as we read her memoir not that long ago, earlier this year. Anywho, the kneel down, I did want feedback on that just to see if I'm in error in terms of how I was processing what was said about what was happening in Baltimore, where they have the astronomical violence and murder rate. And they were saying that the term was depolicing, where the people were sitting on the police car and I guess engaged in some sort of suspicious or criminal activity and enforcement officers weren't doing anything about it. They were saying depolicing. And then they said that this might be also termed to take a knee. I don't know if I misheard it or maybe I'm misconstruing, but that's what it sounded like to me, that this is in some people are describing this as taking a knee. Did I hear that correctly? You all heard it as well. And did any folks have thoughts on that terminology being used for enforcement officials not doing their job?
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, I heard that as well. And I thought that that was interesting because it's once again kind of aligning something bad with something, you know, of course, what Black people or a Black person has done. So I did hear that, and I thought that that was not, it didn't make sense, because like what I've heard other people say, the reason why Kaepernick took the knee is because some white man said that that was respectful. So if white people, it was originally respectful, but then when Kaepernick started doing it, that it's not respectful, then what did that white man mean when he used the term or that phrase? Thank you.
Indeed. We have other folks who had thoughts on the take a knee. If you have other commentary, that's fine. But I did think that was significant. It reminded me the term cultural appropriation, some of the more pathological ways that I have seen it, when they had the enforcement officials in St. Louis and they were on camera. They were caught on video saying, "Whose streets? Our streets." And this is a chant that a lot of Black people had been saying after there had been some sort of abuse of a Black person, often some sort of police shooting, killing of a Black person. But the enforcement officers were chanting that after there were Black people protesting another enforcement officer killing a Black person. If that's how it's being used, if the enforcement officers or any white people are saying, yes, the police are taking a knee by not doing their job and enforcing laws, deterring crime. Wow, that is, you know, something I think should be commented on. Anybody else have any thoughts on that, or if you had other comments you wanted to share? The caller at 4674, did you have commentary?
Yes, can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Okay, peace to the callers, to the host, and to the platform. Yeah, my commentary on the taking the knee, I look at that as something as far as rhetoric or metaphysical speech, rhetoric being, to persuade someone, or metaphysical speech being it really pertains to something that's beyond the physical. But, people can notice when you physically take a knee. If I physically take a knee in front of you, on a football field, you can notice that metaphysically, I feel like in this situation, they're talking about the same thing or the same kind of actions, but it may not be just as visible as taking a knee on a football field in front of 1,000 fans. Also, I wanted to say my observation in the system of racism, white supremacy, that in the ISIS papers, if I'm not mistaken, it says that it was vital to the system of racism, white supremacy, the creation of a white son of God, white Jesus pictures, the religion of racism, white supremacy, redefined through white Jesus. And I just you know, I'm noticing all of this radical Islamic extremism that's taking place around the world in America, and how the racist white supremacists are trying to scoop black people in the roundup of the rowdy terrorists. You know, there was a black ISIS sympathizer or African-American ISIS sympathizer in Waterloo, Iowa. And that was just one of the places where they got one of our people, you know, under that ideology or guise. But I definitely see that being used in the area of politics and war against the black people in the future. And I think that us actually having a serious, non-emotional discussion about the area of religion and spirituality and how it pertains to people that are going to war with us, and how we should go to war with other people or self-defend. So that's all I wanted to say. Once again, peace to the callers, the host, and to the platform.
Indeed. Indeed. I'd connect that, the audio clip we heard this evening, where they were talking about the Trump administration offering millions and millions of dollars to help fight terrorism on the continent. I think a lot of folks are seeing that same pattern of terrorism being now targeting black people and black people worldwide. Other folks have comments? Anybody else have comments they want to make sure they got in?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes. Thanks for taking my call, guys. Yes, I think the whole concept of them, and you were correct, you heard the term taking me. To me, it's a way of subtly making fun of Colin Kaepernick. And the reason why I look at it that way is because the whole purpose of Colin Kaepernick taking the knee was in opposition to police brutality and the treatment of black people in the first place. And for them to use the term take a knee to describe them doing what they normally do in black neighborhoods, which is nothing, to me, it's a way of making a parody out of him doing it in opposition to a serious subject matter. It's basically for them to call police inaction taking a knee. It just looks like a way of just belittling and making fun of his whole concept of saying, I'm going to take a knee to the national anthem, since this is a nationwide problem. And they themselves taking a knee is oh man, it even takes me back to the sit-ins as well, because even with the sit-ins, it was, and sometimes those movements by black people were made fun of as being oh, you're just sitting there, you're not doing anything, so you're not really protesting because you're sitting there getting beat up and deciding to take it, when in reality they sat there and took that abuse so that the world could see this is what we're going through. And you notice we didn't do anything to provoke the attack. You also notice we did not physically retaliate, but this is what we're facing. So that is, to me, how white supremacy functions in regards to the rhetorical ethics and the way that they make fun of our abuse. I mean, even in medical apartheid, we had that story of that surgeon who was dealing with the black male that had mouth cancer. And he first did the surgery with no anesthesia. And then on top of that, he carved a permanent grin in his face. I'm assuming it must have looked like something like the Joker from Batman. And then he wrote about it and laughed about it. The doctor, she had read his journals where he made fun of it and said that he enjoyed himself, you know, torturing this black male. So that's my take on it. Thanks again for taking my call. I'll mute my line.
Indeed. Indeed. Oh, I wanted to make sure I got in before I forgot. The Short Pump High School, that's the same high school that I think a week ago they had the video that became national news, where it showed the white students simulating a rape of black students. And they said, I'm going to say exactly what was in the video. We're going to fuck the black out of you. They were talking to these black students. So at that same high school, they said that before all of that happened, they had a racial physical altercation with the same students, same group. And you heard the white mother, she was on the news broadcast, and she said that her son
Apparently, see, this is details. She said that it was not a student of color. She didn't just say it was a white student. She said it was not a student of color. If I'm to infer from her language, so a white student was going around saying, call me a nigger, call me a nigger, call me a nigger. Her son did it. Later, her son was in the altercation and they said it happened again. And this time her son got punched. So again, I'm left to infer because they didn't exactly say it explicitly. Apparently, her son said nigger again. This time, I guess he said it in the presence, or maybe he even called a black student a nigger, and that started a violent altercation. I thought that was another one where it seems like we're not being explicit enough here and giving out details where this white mom might be practicing racism and defending her racist child. Maybe I could allow if he said it once, just being goofy, but two times, wait a minute now. You're not just going to tell me this was a whoops, an accident that happened twice, and even provoked an altercation the second time that it went on at this high school where they're making videos of white students raping the black out of children. Anywho, do we have other folks who had comments they wanted to share?
May I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thanks. And just want to say this real quick, and then I'll leave myself. The call that the clip that you did of the lady whose son was in the school and the white boy was threatening her son's life. And so I listened to her talk. And I think the thing that struck me, and I know, and she said, like, her son was just like, why? And I was just sitting here listening. I said, black parents, we have just got to get to the point that we have to tell our children, these people will hate you just because you're black. That's the only reason. It doesn't have to be anything. You're black, and they hate you. And it just pains me, just like, I'm not trying to dog anybody down, because I can only imagine, but it's just like, sometimes we act like we're so, when I talk about we, I put that in quotes, talking about blacks. But like, we're so naive to these things, you know, because one thing we have to think about, white people, we're black, you know, white people will hate us just because we're black. There has to be no reason. That's just it, you know. Well, you know, people would say, and she even said, I don't know if her son said it or she said it, because it's not like that, or it's not supposed to be like that. And I remember saying to myself, well, who says it's not like that? Who says it's not supposed to be like that, when that's basically been the history of this country? Basically, almost to me, what her son, what the white boy was doing, is basically the norm in this country. And then the stuff died down for a little while, you know, especially, you know, getting to the civil rights, and, you know, everybody want to come out there, oh, yeah, we all this and that. And, I mean, you know, it died down for a blink of an eye. And then it comes back, and now you have this president that's in office, so it's back almost in full force. So you might just say, well, okay, I'm sorry, that's a metaphor. But back very, very strongly. And I just think that black people, we just got to be more honest with our children about the real world. Let me just add this to that, and then I'll say this, and I'll tie this to the case with the young lady Jasmine at the University of Hartford. You hear black people, you know, I read things and I hear people talk about, you know, black kids, hey, maybe we go down here to HBCUs. We're not saying HBCUs are perfect, but we are saying that some of the foolishness that you deal with on these other campuses, white campuses, you may not have to deal with it. I'll throw this in. There's another story out there about a student that was at some school in Kansas, and how they put all that graffiti on his car, go home, nigger, all this stuff like that, and he's withdrawn from school. And so I would hear people, like you people say, well, you know, let's go to HBCUs, and they say, you hear black people talk about, well, that's not the real world. And today, as I was thinking about what this young lady Jasmine went through, and I guess I can use this young man whose car was, you know, defaced. You know, if that's, you know, that's been they experienced the real world, you know, that, you know, you're going to go out to this world and, or go to these schools, these white kids, and they're going to stick their toothpaste, your toothbrush, your child's toothbrush up their behinds, and they're going to spit in their stuff and do things to them, you know. And so I'm just kind of like a push, you know, for HBCUs, and that we just need to grow up, because the thing that started, and I can understand her pain, because
and let's be real, I think that we probably could say, well, I'll say from this to the story, that somewhere the school was protecting that young man. Somewhere the school was protecting him, you know. And so, you know, and it's something that you got to send your child to school and worry about your child getting killed. And then the other side of that, too, though, as she said, Black people, we've got to begin to get these children, our children, out of these schools. And I know some private says it's not about running, but it's just about safety and protection. Remember, they in Virginia, they closed the schools down for, what, five years? I think I listened to the story you did because of desegregation, you know, and they run from us. You know what I'm saying? They don't want us, you know, in quote-unquote their schools for craziness. And so I didn't think of Black people, we have just got to become, stop being so naive and thinking that, oh, you know, because this thing, and I'll say this and I'm through, when you hear these things, well, not all whites are racist. You know, there's some good white people. And that foolishness talk, in my opinion, has just got to come to an end because there are just some dangerous things going on out here with these people in regards to us. And I'll mute myself. Thank you for taking that call. And I'll mute myself.
Appreciate that call.
May I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Just real quick, I just wanted to thank the lady from Ohio for the well wishes. This is Red. And I had one quick comment about the first segment about the Hispanic or quote unquote Latino, Hispanic, what have you, that player making a racist remark towards the half Japanese player, or it might have been reversed. But when the journalist, when he was speaking about how, you know, they needed to, the Latino or quote unquote community needs to get past this being okay with racism or racist jokes, he had used a metaphor. He said that it was seen as a Black stain. So for him to be a journalist and still use a racist metaphor, I kind of felt like, well, you know, you don't really, he didn't really seem like he was really trying that hard. Thank you. And I'll mute my line.
Great point. He did say that consistently associating Black, dark with things that are vile and to be to look down, or things that are just vile, anything that is thought to be wretched, something to be avoided, associating that with Black darkness. I did want to make sure I pointed this out just because of it's been my experience. It is a pattern that it's white men. The situation at the University of Harvard, where this white female student was doing the terrorizing, this was not a white man that the university was protecting. It was a white woman that they were protecting, Brianna Brochu, I believe, the white terrorist's name in this situation. The caller at 3246, did you have commentary? 3246.
Yes, sir. Can I be heard?
Caller at 3246. Let's.
Yes, sir. Sorry, I was slow on my mute button.
Mm.
Greetings. This is Imhondisi. I just wanted to say about the. So when I traveled across America or different parts of America, I noticed that there's a fence going all across the land, and they fence off the land, so it looks like there's less space than there is. But if we ever needed to, we could always occupy those spaces and try as best as we could to be self-sufficient, especially if things happened to where the grid went down and we weren't able to use our electronics. You know, I've been looking into for a long time different survival packs, different things that people they give advice of what you should use for survival, and even possibly getting a dog that can smell certain things like explosives under the ground, like landmines, because if it ever got to that point to where, you know, we had to run away from, you know, from white people in mass numbers, you know, they may booby trap certain areas and everything like that. So there's dogs that can smell those sort of things. And then the other thing is, you know, while the grid is up, technology is way too advanced not to be able to, you know, make a very solid contact with Africa, in my strong opinion. and with the people there, I think we can, I really think we can mold the minds, or at least get them to have some type of alliance with us so that we can have a better chance here and all around the world. Thank you.
Second time, I think we have been encouraged to make constructive use of technology, getting networking with other non-white people and using it, recording information, recording, reporting, sharing information. We have other folks. We have about 15 minutes left in the broadcast. Again, we'll be here tomorrow. John Patash will be visiting us his third time on the program, discussing his work in the context of the Black Identity Extremists report. Be interesting to get his thoughts on the JFK files as well, because he talks a lot. He has, I know MLK is on the cover. I was incorrect yesterday about George Jackson, but MLK, yes, is on the front cover. Other folks have commentary they want to get in?
Can I be heard?
Thomas in New York.
Yes. First thing I wanted to say is I'm taking a knee. I don't recall the football players taking a knee during the game. Now, they play hard on the field. They took a knee before the game, but this isn't cops taking a knee in the meeting room before they go on their shift. This is the cops taking a knee on their shift. That's not taking a knee. That's not doing your job. And they should be fired. I would be very interested to see. And just how that would work here, instantly. Like, they wouldn't even get a chance. Let someone have people sitting on a cop car, and you send that to the NYPD. They'll make an example out of them cops. Yeah, you just know how we handle our niggas. You don't let them, we don't do it like that. So I totally think that that's a terrible metaphor to use that they use for that. I wanted to talk about a terminology. Now, I've come on the show before. I coined the phrase white validation. I've heard quite a few people use it. And I want to talk about, first, white validation, for people who don't know, it works both ways. Of course, black people, they suffer from it. You have people who are addicted to it, and people who have the disease. They can't be cured, generally because of their spousal arrangement or their parents. But whites practice it too, because they get pleasure from the consumption of the energy that they get from black people when they're being validated by them. And you can see that play out if you stop taking that pat on the shoulder or whatever, and it's not a big deal to you, and you'll see how they'll change. This one here, I label white obfuscation disorder. That's blacks suffer from. And this is generally, I'll give you an example. If you're talking about white supremacy, the system, the victim will usually obfuscate, somehow make excuses for the white people, or start talking about something that has nothing to do with the problem. They usually, favorite thing is they'll bring up, well, that's black people, but what I've been noticing and taking place is how whites practice it. And for context, I've already spoke about our president grabbing people by their vaginas. And then we have, during that election campaign, you had the Podesta emails, the Epstein link, the Trump and Clinton. Now we got Harvey Weinstein, Kevin Spacey, Tim Murphy, President Bush, the first one, Mark Halperin, Ailes, O'Reilly, Eric Boyles, Ken Baker, Charles King, and all these women. Now the report came out today that Epstein had 78 women, and they have detailed accounts of each one of their stories. Weinstein, apologize. 78 women. Now, we know that white sexual degenerate behavior is essential to their domination. So here's an example of them practicing white. That was all for context. I'm at work. Right after workplace racism. I go to my job. I see this black head nurse. I go talk to her and the black clerk. And two of the black head nurses' subordinates are sitting there. And they're talking about Harvey Weinstein. So the black clerk is pretty conscious, and we generally speak in a way that's probably uncodified, but you know, we both understand what we're talking about. And the head nurse isn't, she's black. So she, you can see in her face, she wants to talk to them. She wants to jump in that conversation. And when she does, I type in my phone, Bill Cosby. And I show it to the black clerk and she looks at me puzzled. And then within seconds of the conversation, she jumps into about Harvey Weinstein. Guess where the conversation went? To Bill Cosby, they obfuscate. So let's take this same thing. This is another example. I'll close my line after this, guys. Thank you for taking my call. This whole JFK tape release, who do they go at? You know, I just named all these white people just this year or last year who've been called out for sexual harassment, sexual degenerate behavior. However, now they make the poster boy Martin Luther King. Just obfuscating away from what the real problem is. Black people don't have this problem. We do have sexual problems that we've inherited from them, but nowhere near the mass. Now, just look at the problem as far as Harvey Weinstein with 78 women, all actresses. I know women talk. I know that one went to the other, say, man, watch out for Harvey. We don't want to be going up to his hotel room. But they did it anyway. And, it's just like, that's just their behavior. And how they switch it right back on to us, like it's our, like we're the ones with the bad behavior. They do this in every aspect of their system. I mute my line, guys. Thank you.
Indeed. Appreciate that. So we've had, I think, our second term within the last month or so. I think our caller in Florida, he had racial focal pointing for the practice when whites, when they try to make it seem as though there are a sizable portion of whites who are not racists, that all the racists are just maybe a hand or a dozen, maybe 12, 5, 10 whites over in one corner. That's all the racists and the rest of the white people. We are not racist. Now we have our second one within the last month or so. White obfuscation, purposely shifting away from the problem. White dedication to white supremacy. Got some illustrations. I think some other listeners have noted that pattern. And in fact, like might even predict a situation like what you had with the roommate, that they might within the next week or two, the next week or so, try to see if they can bring attention to a situation where a white person, a white student, is being harassed by a black student. So they can tell, oh, yeah, see, this is not, this is just widespread. You know, dorm roommates, you know, they fuss and fight. It's not about racism. You know, this just happens. College kids do goofy things and, you know, they're still learning and all that sort of thing. But white obfuscation, we'll have to keep that one. Think about that one. See if folks can use it, apply it in a counter-racist manner. We have other folks' comments they want to make sure they get in. Any other comments? Folks want to make sure they get in. Last 5 minutes before we get ready to wrap things up.
Well, question for you, Gus. Now, I've listened to your show for years, and I've never heard any white people call in and make derogatory comments, you know, and you have to mute them. And I've listened to shows, and I've seen that happen. Has that ever happened on your show before?
Yes, sir. We've had white people call in and do racist jokes. I remember it happening in 2011. I don't remember who the guest was. I think we had the infamous, I think it was when Freddie Lee was on. I think we had a white person who called in and made some sort of racist remark or really quick that I muted. I think we had another broadcast. We had a broadcast where a white person actually said that they wrote a poem. I think this was in later in 2011, we had a white person who called in who said that they had written a poem about black people that they wanted to read. And I had to mute them like, yes, it's happened a number of times that I can recall specifically. Yes.
And the last thing I want to...
Let's see. I heard Thomas, did you want to get your other comment and then we can get the other caller who just spoke up?
Yeah, I was just going to say very quickly, Ken Steele brought up a great point. I've been looking at this flat earth thing, and there's a black guy who's very popular in decoding this, but he did something that was very COINTEL, in my opinion, and I just think that this is deliberate. Now, he has been bringing people on from the so-called conscious community, the black conscious community, to debate him, and the last time he did it, he brought the white people on to question the black people, and they were doing it in a way that let you know that they listened to, you know, these people's channels. It was just like interjecting them into something that they're not in right now, and I just thought that that was done very deliberately. It was being done strategically. I mute my line.
The other caller who spoke up, did you have commentary you wanted to share?
Absolutely. This, again, is B from Central New York. I wanted to remind everybody to please support Umar Johnson. He's come under tremendous pressure and attack lately. Of course, I don't know if it's been resolved yet, but the body responsible for giving him his accreditation so he can actually practice child psychology was threatening to take away his license. So please support him. Also, Gus, I got to tell you, your show has opened my eyes on so many levels. And I just wanted to report to you something very deeply personal to myself. 21 years ago, my father passed away when I was a young teenager at that. And one of the things that he had always told me was there would come a time when black people would have to once and for all face the unmitigated truth of he used to use the word the unsavory truth of what they actually meant to America. He grew up in the Deep South, born in the late 1930s. He actually witnessed a good friend of his be lynched and watched the Ku Klux Klan come riding through his neighborhood and encountered incredible racism as he became a police officer in the North and then became a fireman years later. So ultimately, he gave all of that up to become a regular factory worker and encountered tons of racism. Excuse me, that's a metaphor, but he encountered so much racism doing that work that he ultimately was forced out of it. And I myself, my parents tried to protect me way too much from the idea of racism. And I first came across your show in 2011. I listened to one episode. Actually, I listened to about an hour of one episode and found it too raw to deal with. And I kind of pushed it away for a couple of years until about 2014, when circumstances in my life presented me with the opportunity to break out of the slumber that I felt I was in and not seeing the reality that racism had always presented around me. And it was your program, which seemed to appear out of nowhere. I still don't remember how I actually came across it again, but I used it as it's a metaphor. But I did use it as a way to build up my ability to see the world incredibly sharp after circumstances forced me to do so. And that is really the message I hope people take away from your show, is that it is not enough sometimes for us to just tell people about racism. When we can actually pinpoint accurately what the person is dealing with and what they actually need to know to translate what they are dealing with into a knowledge of knowing racism is at the heart of what they're dealing with.
we can utilize your show specifically and the topics that it discusses week in and week out to open people's eyes. And I've done this. So for anyone who hasn't really went through your long list of episodes, I would encourage you please to, and then start sharing them individually. Don't worry about the entire show, but individually with individual people, because I guarantee you, you will wake people up. Again, thank you very much, Gus. Peace to you and good weekend. Have a good weekend. I will be with you tomorrow evening.
Much obliged. Open people's eyes is a metaphor. The conference that you wanted us to check out, I know you said globalresearch.ca, but was there a conference specifically that you wanted to make sure that folks checked out that happened within the last few days or so?
It was an intelligence committee meeting, I believe. If memory serves me correctly, the article was posted either on the 1st or 2nd of this month. They actually archive their stuff per date, so you should be able to find it that way.
Intelligence Committee meeting, and this is posted at globalresearch.ca?
Yes. Yes.
Awesome. Awesome.
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. With that, can you get your commentary in 30 seconds?
I think so. It was two things I wanted to say, but I'll just cut it short to one. I just wanted to say that I found an article in the last few days that actually speaks to the fact that the epidemic homosexuality that we are seeing amongst not just Black people, but especially Black people, but amongst other people too, is an act of warfare. They did a genetic test on twins, and they found that one twin was gay, the other twin was not gay. The gay twin was the recipient of an epigenetic change to the father's genome. So that is documented now. So just in case, understand that when you see these epidemics of young black people and older Black people coming out saying that they're gay, transgender, transhuman, whatever they want to label themselves, that they're being genetically changed and it's coming up as an epigenetic change. So they're either ingesting something, a chemical of some sort, or the environment is causing a trigger in their genes where they're splitting off and displaying these characteristics. Thank you. I'll meet my line.
Context of white supremacy. Appreciate that, Roz. With that, we will conclude the compensatory call-in, but we will be here tomorrow. John Patash joining us normal time, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. We will be discussing his work within the context of the Black Identity Extremist Report. I'm sure we'll discuss some other topics as well, but that should be tomorrow. We should also be here on this coming Monday, Robin Maynard, Black female. She is a Canada resident, and she has just published a book about white supremacy in Canada. It's Policing Black Lives, and kind of gives her assessment of the history and evolution of white supremacy in Canada. She should be here on Monday evening, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. She was supposed to be with us this past week, but we lost out to candy corn and the holiday. That's it. Thanks, everyone, for tuning into the broadcast. I hope it was a constructive investment of your Saturday evening. If you have questions, comments, gripes, if you cannot find something in the archives, drop an email, untiljustice@gmail.com, untiljustice@gmail.com. Much obliged. We will respond, try to help out if you have a question or guest suggestion, if you have other information. With that, thanks again for all the folks who called, listened in. I will suggest, as usual, sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. Racists have a long history of exploiting, taking advantage of non-white people, especially if we're not able to think correctly, clearly, because we're intoxicated under the influence. So just be mindful of that. I would encourage sobriety. If you have got to consume, you definitely want to have a code to make sure that you're not going to have any unnecessary problems, end up having contact with an enforcement official or whites, period, badge or no. Just be mindful, be alert. The system of racism, white supremacy does not pause just because we want to have fun. And certainly if you're going to be in a vehicle, you want to be sober and you want to be buckled up. whether you are a driver or a passenger, don't want to have that be the time where you get stopped by an enforcement officer, race soldier, and, oh, I am not sober. That's it. We ask, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other Black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of Black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another Black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cow signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
your
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
Even my conditioning has been conditioned.